Bus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. 40,000 White Sox Pope hats were given out last night in Chicago as the White Sox hosted the Reds. Pope Leo is a fan of the franchise that currently leads the AL Central, but a 10th inning RBI from Ellie De La Cruz lifted Cincinnati over Chicago 5-4 in game one of a three-game set. Reds halt a three-game slide with the win. Both teams are back at Wright Field tonight at 7:40. You can hear that game on The Fan after the Buckeye Show. As for the Guardians, Cleveland lost to Detroit last night 6-4. Guardians are four back of the Sox in the AL Central. In the minors Tuesday, Columbus and Omaha were rained out at Huntington Park. No makeup dates have been announced, but you can exchange Tuesday tickets for any future home game. Columbus and Omaha are back at Huntington tonight at 7:05. And Ohio State football continues training camp Wednesday. Arthur Smith will meet with the media after practice today. This update is sponsored by Hydrate Me Med Spa. Look great, feel great. Personalized wellness and aesthetic treatments that work from the inside out. HydrateMeMedSpa.com.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Tom Tiberi here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me.
Oh,
I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Michigan quarterback Bryce Underwood said what? We'll get to that in just a second. High or lower coming your way at 10 o'clock. Play-by-play voice of your Cleveland Browns and the podcast host of Hard Knocks, Hard Knocks. Mr. Siciliano, Andrew Siciliano of Yahoo and NFL Network. He'll join us coming up at 10:30. 11 o'clock, we get your Hey Guys questions. Time to get those into the fellas at 971 BFS on the X platform. We can also take those live in the YouTube chat. And then at 11:48, we get you your officially endorsed. We had some weather. We had some big time weather, as all of you know, through here and through the state of Ohio in general. But some of these images that I was seeing last night from around old Columbus Town are just terrifying, the scope of it. The bake you were saying, I had not seen this stuff at Burliner. I did see the video of the car being flipped on 71 by what very clearly seems like a tornado. I saw some stuff. Tim May sent me some stuff at his place. This is terrifying stuff. These incredible trees that are down, and that there is something that is quite humbling about the weather and the predictability of the unpredictability of it. And we have more data now than we've ever had on how to behave in these circumstances with extreme weather. And it does feel like we have more and more of it than ever. I don't know if just as I'm getting old, but even when I was out west this summer, and the crazy forest fires that are going and running rampant out there, whether you're in Idaho, where 10,000 homes were decimated in Spokane, Idaho, or Spokane, Washington, rather, into Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. A lot of these Montana fires in the southwestern part of the state as well, becoming quite devastating to these crazy thunderstorms and tornadic activity that we're having here. This is now something that, obviously, living in our first place we had in town was in Marble Cliff, and I remember hearing the Arlington tornado sirens. You know, what is it, Reese? Wednesday at when?
Wednesday's at noon.
Wednesday's at noon, yeah.
I don't know if it'll be today because of the actual thunderstorms we're supposed to have in the area, unless there is actual funnel clouds, which I think there was one yesterday in the Marion Village, Old Town East area, but there was enough damage that there is an investigation right now into whether or not a funnel cloud actually touched down in Columbus.
There's no way there wasn't, with some of the damage that went through downtown, and you mentioned Burliner Park, Bo, and all of that. Like, there's no way there wasn't.
Well, you have an experience. One of your buddies, right, Bake?
Yeah. Now, I do not know if he was physically driving at the time or if he was just sitting, but I have a buddy that drives a box truck, and the wind blew his truck over with him in it. And he has a C2 fracture now and has to wear a neck brace for the next 6 to 8 weeks, which I guess is best case scenario because they were talking about surgery possibly. So
it's terrifying. And it just as a reminder of how small we all are in the grand scheme of things. But I do think that the severe thunderstorm tornado stuff that's becoming a little bit more regular around here, I think as for me at least, and I've kind of lived in all parts of the country, so I've dealt with the hurricane stuff when I was in Florida and the wildfires out west. I do think the tornado stuff is the most terrifying because of the unpredictable nature of it. Hurricanes, in my experience in the 7 years that I was down there, they were pretty forecastable. I mean, the devastation is so grand when it comes to hurricanes, but like you can get out. They tell you. It's coming. Like, don't be an idiot. Get out of here. And they tell you. So yes, you have the incredible and devastating loss of property and home and all of that displaced and trying to rebuild all of those things. That's all. You can't even wrap your head around that type of a catastrophic loss to things that belong to you. But in terms of yourself personally, you have a decent warning with this tornado stuff. You don't.
No, you don't, Bo. I've got a friend that's actually, they live in Florida, but they're up in Cincinnati right now. And she sent a group message to all of us saying, you guys deal with this all the time. This is terrifying. She's like, I can't take this.
Yeah, we kind of do now. Right? I mean, you guys grew up here. When you guys were kids, do you remember stuff like this coming through?
Nothing. Not in Northwest Columbus. Unheard of something touching down. I mean, you get high winds, you know, periodically, but the extreme force of yesterday, I mean, I think John Glenn had clocked a gust at 88 miles an hour.
Good Lord.
Like, that's not normal.
So, I mean, I guess these things were around, but maybe they didn't come through Columbus. You've always heard, like, that the 270, there's like a heat dome there that changes the weather. So I think it's rare that the tornadoes come right through downtown. Like, yesterday might have been an anomaly as far as that. But it does seem like storms get to Columbus and they either de-escalate or they just kind of go around.
So the late, great Chris Bradley, I remember talking to him about this when he was the chief meteorologist at Channel 10, and he mentioned something about what you just said, that heat dome. I couldn't remember the exact phrasing he had, but he mentioned something about that, about how the topography of the town, and let's be real honest, nobody here is a scientist, and we didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express. So, this is all anecdotal, obviously. But I remember talking to Chris Bradley about it, and he kind of had that. That was exactly what he told me, that because of the topography of Columbus itself, it's very difficult for extreme weather to come kind of right through it. Like, it can happen around us. Like, we had devastating tornadoes in the state of Ohio. There's one up in Toledo years ago, I remember. And I remember the derecho one year that we had that was pretty damn severe. But it does feel like this is happening more and more often. And certainly this time of year, it's happening more and more often. So just very empathetic for everybody. I saw there was, I think, 1,000 911 calls yesterday to Columbus Fire.
Goodness.
Good Lord. Like, just folks, be patient. We're all in this together on something like this. And so be patient. You know that those emergency service people are working around the clock to get things going and do just an incredible job. But it's a humbling thing when something like this happens and you're reminded of how small you are and how helpless you are by it. And for me, from my vantage point, this is the most terrifying because you can't, the unpredictable nature of it. Yeah, you can get alerts on your phone from Channel 10 or whatever, and they can say, hey, you know, shelter in place, whatever. But at the same time, like, you don't know exactly where, you know, like a hurricane, you can see a forest fire, you can see they escalate, they get more severe, but you can see it. People tell you about it. You know how it's going to go. It's different with the weather and with the wind. The wind with these thunderstorms that becomes tornadic, it's terrifying.
I couldn't help but yesterday seeing the video of the car on 71. Literally just getting flipped right over with cars all around it. I couldn't help but think of the Ron White where it doesn't matter that the wind is blowing. It's what the wind is blowing. If you get hit by a Volvo, That's all I could think of when I saw that video.
I mean, that was terrifying to have something like that go through here. So we'll attempt to provide a little distraction to all of this for those of you who are displaced or still dealing with power out or whatever you're dealing with, because obviously a very severe day and probably more to come on that side of things. So we'll provide a little distraction here over the next 2 hours and 45 minutes. We'll kick it off with Bryce Underwood, the Michigan quarterback, with some interesting thoughts on the rivalry game. We'll get to that coming up next. We're off and running on a First Friday. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The Buckeyes are number one. And you can hear all the games here on The Fan, which is also number one. Coincidence? I think not. Your home of champions, The Fan.
The magic of...
Feel that? The season is getting closer. Buckeye football comes your way in 24 days. Every game. Every season. Proud to be your flagship home for Ohio State football. The Fan. Ohio sports destination. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Your Wednesday forecast is trending much drier today after we had multiple rounds of severe thunderstorms yesterday. Highs right around the low 80s, and you'll have a light breeze to get you through the rest of the afternoon. But we do still have a chance of seeing some isolated showers and storms continued for your Wednesday forecast. Tonight, trending much drier as well with lows right around the 60s. I'm your 10 Weather Impact meteorologist, Lily Aldridge, 97.1 The Fan.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. We'll read your emails on the air. But we won't tell you where to send them. Hey, we're not doing all the work for you. This is Bishop and Friends.
This will be my 20th season covering Ohio State football. And during that time, I've kind of run the full gamut of my experiences with the Michigan game, and it's kind of evolved. You could certainly say devolved at the end of that stretch. There's no question we're entering a new era of it now. When I first got here was the year I had flown in to see my wife, who then my girlfriend, who was working at Channel 4 at the time, and I was here. I did not cover the game. I was still down in Florida, but I was here. I flew in on the day of the game of the century, number one versus number two. So that's, I flew in to visit her, and then that May, I got to Channel 10. So 2007, May of 2007 was when I first got here. And the first run of that rivalry that I saw, and I didn't go to that game in 2007 up in Ann Arbor. But the first run of it was Michigan loses that opener to Appalachian State, but that was Mike Hart, Chad Henne, all of that. And that ended up being the end of Lloyd Carr. And so, Lloyd Carr was a guy in the rivalry who had great success early in his time, and then Tress broke him. And the games were always competitive, but there was a pretty big level of respect between the two. It was like, these are two heavyweight titans that are fighting, and Ohio State's won the last few, but Michigan had the 90s that they could kind of lean on a little bit. And so there was a great deal of respect. And then Michigan fell off a cliff in a way that it's hard to really wrap your head around now, the cliff that they fell off of. I was actually trying to think of another program that went from, you know, 2 years previously on the precipice of a national championship and a perfect season playing a number one versus two. They started that next year when they lost to Appalachian State. I'm sure in the top five, if memory serves. I'm pretty sure they were top five team with Henne and Hart and Jake Long and all those guys. By the time you got to 2008, they were cooked. I mean, it was that team, Rich Rodriguez brought out the Herod Rich, and it was an unmitigated disaster. He ran guys off, and then his turn in the rivalry game, the games were laughable. They were utterly laughable. I mean, there were Tate Forcier, I remember, at quarterback, among others, Stephen Threet at quarterback, like just no chance at all against the Buckeye behemoth. And so then this incredible stretch happened, and then, you know, they get the one win when, you know, with Tatgate and all of that. But then Urban comes and then it's just an annihilation happens. Although Brady Hoke at least got them kind of headed in the right direction in recruiting again, to where by the time Harbaugh got there, they were at a point where they could go toe to toe. Urban just never lost. And then Ryan didn't lose early. And then you had the 2020 game with COVID and all of that. And I do think that the Harbaugh, this much, I mean, that to me was the turning point. was him post game on the JT Barrett, you know, holding his hands up this much. It was that far short. And then Curtis Samuel winning on the walk off. I think that flipped it. And then I think Harbaugh became just a desperate man and was willing to do anything to win that game. And he did. And it was proven. And he got to walk out like Danny Ocean, as we've said many times. And then Sherrone Moore takes it over. But the grimy underbelly that the Michigan program had become was now for everybody to see. And in the end, for him, it is salacious and sad and all of those things. But I think during that tenure of Urban to Harbaugh with Day to Moore was the most vitriol that I have ever been a part of in a sporting event. There was very little in the way of respect. There was very little in the way. I mean, I think those of us around it, you know, like when we have John U. Bacon on, like I love John U. Bacon. So there's a great deal of respect, I think, for the people who have been around it a long time. But in terms of the people who participated in it, it was just unwavering, unashamed, unabashed hate. It just was vitriolic. And there was just no, to the point where you are almost like, I mean, it was fun to watch, but it was also nervy to watch, and it was borderline uncomfortable. Like, you didn't want anything. You just were kind of hoping nothing would escalate to the point where someone get thrown out or something like that. I mean, this was a little bit before that, but certainly Marcus Hall, we remember all of that. I suppose it would probably, I don't know if maybe this is what Bo and Woody would have been like in the 10-year war if we had social media and it was covered all the time. Maybe it would have felt like that then. I don't know. It was a very different world at that time, but we were just completely surrounded by it during that run. And now Michigan's in this spot where they have this reset. And I'm not sure exactly what the next 3 to 5 years of the rivalry is going to look like. I'm not sure exactly what it's going to look like with Kyle Whittingham at the front of it. What I do know is there will be a de-escalation in a very, very big way, because the principals who are responsible for it becoming the way that it got are gone. Jim Harbaugh's gone. His lieutenants are gone. Sherrone Moore's gone. His lieutenants are gone. And so Kyle Whittingham comes in without any of that. So in the middle of that is Bryce Underwood. So some attention has been given to the comments that he made. He did an interview with John Fanta of NBC Sports on the game. And I believe we have the audio. You can go ahead and play it.
How do you define the game?
It's a blessing to be in. Very physical. Like I said, it's all around taxing mentally, physically. You got to stay strong mentally. You got to stay strong physically. You can't quit. Can't give up.
When you think about your first meeting with Ohio State, what comes to mind?
I lost. So all it is.
Does that drive you?
I mean, my goal is to be 1-0 every day. You know, Saturdays, I want to be 1-0. Sundays, I want to be 1-0. Mondays, I want to be 1-0. So that's what drives me.
How much different is that game from any other you've played in?
It's just another game, just with guys in a different color. So I see it.
It's funny. I was at a press conference. You guys, I don't know if you guys, Reese, you may not even remember this. You probably don't remember him, but you probably won't remember how great he was. There was a receiver at Florida State named Peter Warwick, who was the Heisman front runner in 1999. And if you want to just watch fun YouTube clips, just type in Peter Warwick, YouTube, Florida State. It's unbelievable how good he was. He probably won the Heisman in 99. FSU was the number one team in the country. And Peter Warwick was giving a press conference, and it's a 15-minute press conference, and he's crushing it. And the press conference is in regard to Dillard's. There was a Dillard's scandal where he would go to Dillard's and buy stuff, and they would charge him like a tenth of the price for the stuff because he was Peter Warwick. Something that probably happens everywhere and happened everywhere in college athletics. But he got caught. He got pinched. So he's given this press conference. And at the end of the press conference, one of the last questions is something to the effect of, well, do you think the punishment fits the crime? And he said something to the effect of, I don't remember the exact quote. I probably should have prepped a little better now that this popped into my head. But as I was listening to Bryce, it reminded me of it. Something to the effect of, it's not like I shot the president. Something like that. And it was like, whoa. So that was, where did this come from, right? It was the last line. So this isn't that. But the last line, he says, it's just another game, just with guys in a different color. That's how I see it. The first 40 seconds of the answer checks every box you'd want from a Michigan perspective, right? It's physical. It's tough. You're judged by it. I lost all of it. He checks every box, but at the last line, he says, it's just another game, just with guys in a different color. That's how I see it. And then it gets all the attention. That's what got the attention. Not the rest of it is fine. It's totally fine. Everything else he said is fine. It's just another game. And by the way, that part's fine too. That's okay to have that approach. That probably should be his approach. If you were a Michigan fan, would you want your quarterback going, I am completely obsessed with that game. And all the other games are aperitif to get to that game.
No,
probably not.
Not right now. I think they're in such a point where I would say that one quote from one of their top men is okay by itself. I think that's, you get a little bit in trouble as an organization when your coach and your quarterback are saying similar things. Like, they're not the exact same thing because they're asked different questions about the rivalry, but when you both got them saying it within the relatively similar time span, then I think everybody's, you know, antenna goes up, especially on the Michigan side of things.
So when Kyle Whittingham said what he did, I kind of understood it, because there's always been a respect with the rivalry, and you necessarily didn't hate the people, but God, you hated to lose to them, and you were going to do whatever you could to make sure that didn't happen. Just another game, that's not okay, because it's not just another game. As much as the system we are in college football is trying to make it just another game, and it does not have the importance that it used to, just for the simple fact that we saw a couple years ago, you can lose the game and still win your ultimate prize. You can still win a national championship and lose it. That doesn't mean the game doesn't mean anything, but it does take a little luster off of it, because you couldn't used to do that. There was not a time in history where you were losing to Michigan and still winning the national championship. Mm. That's not the case anymore. So that part of the game has dropped in importance, but the game itself will never not be important, especially to these two schools. So when Bryce Underwood says that, I'm pretty concerned if I'm a Michigan fan, because you have got to hate to lose to Ohio State if you're Michigan, and vice versa if you're Ohio State.
Yeah, I think hating to lose to them is different than hating them, and that goes to like the Whittingham comments, right? I think.
Yeah, so
why would he hate? He has no reason to hate Ohio State yet. Obviously, he wants to beat them. We'll play those comments in just a second, but the because he was asked to kind of clear it up. The Underwood stuff. Listen, I'm big give grace guy to 19-year-olds. Give him grace. I don't think he said anything. We played the entire clip. The first 40 seconds of it are fine. They're fine. He talks about the physicality. He talked about how it's unlike any other game. He talked about all of those things. But then Fanta kind of is pressing him, and then he wants kind of like, he wants the money quote out of him. He's trying to lead him to say what it means to him. And then Underwood has that final line where he says, it's just another game, just with guys in a different color. That's how I see it. I'm sure he doesn't actually even believe that. But sometimes you have to remember, you're talking to somebody who's, what is he, 19? 20? Like, if somebody put a mic in front of any of us at 19 or 20 and asked us to have all sorts of thoughts on things, it would probably not have gone great either. So it's one of those things where I just give him some grace on it. From the Michigan perspective, I don't know that it's a harbinger of things to come. I think the harbinger of things to come is that Ohio State's just a lot better than them right now, and a lot better spot right now as an organization, because they went through what they've gone through, and they're a major state of transition. I mentioned the Kyle Whittingham comments. He was pressed to kind of explain the not hate for Ohio State. We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros. The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. We're talking about the rivalry a little bit and some of the messaging coming out of Michigan on it. Kyle Whittingham, one of the most respected coaches in college football, I'd say, over the last couple of decades. I think outside of people at BYU, who hates the guy? right? I mean, it seems like anytime you heard anybody talk to him, and obviously we've played him in a Rose Bowl, he kind of checks all of the boxes you'd want a football coach to check. And when you think about, we had Phil Steele on yesterday, he talked about like Michigan kind of backing into a home run with Kyle Whittingham. Utah was kind of ready to move on a little bit. Maybe he wasn't quite as eager to get into the NIL world the way that Utah was kind of hoping for. And remember, they have the private equity stuff at Utah too, so they have a lot going on. Whittingham somehow says, yeah, I still want to coach. They probably went for a Hail Mary on Kalen DeBoer. Didn't work. Kenny Dillingham didn't work. So all of a sudden, Whittingham shows up there, and he's kind of the perfect Band-Aid for all that ails them in that you cannot question his character at all. Everything that he's done, it stands on its own. And the respect for him around the sport is kind of universal. So they kind of get a guy who can basically be a fixer or a cleaner. I mean, he's Mr. Wolf in Pulp Fiction. He's coming in to clean things up. That's what he's doing. So he made headlines a couple weeks ago at the Big Ten Media Days with his comments about not hating Ohio State, not hating Ryan. I'm not even sure the context of the question, but I remember we played it when it happened. He was asked this week to kind of clarify the game and his comments around it. Here's how he did it.
We have a better chance to win if I hated them. Or, I mean, I don't understand. What if the kids have the best chance to win them all four? Want to beat them worse than anybody, you know, around. And so I don't know how that got to be such a hot topic. Anyway, I cut you off. What was your question?
No problem. Historically, there have been like periods dedicated to beating Ohio State. I was wondering if you believe, if you had something like that for the Holy War, if you still believe in that sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah. There's periods where you know in practice segments or things in the weight room that you know that's talked about. We've got the countdown clocks. I mean, I'm not trying to downplay that at all. It's a huge game, gigantic, and it's something that we all have in the back of our mind 24/7. And so I don't know. You know, I probably should have worded it differently, but that game is of the utmost importance.
Was that surprising to you, how the reaction
from... No, people, you know, it's not. It's not surprising, I guess. I guess I set myself up for it in a lot of ways. But just don't confuse that with the desire, you know, a lack of desire to win the game. I mean, we obviously understand that is the game.
Does he have anything to apologize for?
Not in my opinion. Not apologize. I think he did a decent job of walking it back there. I think he didn't understand at first, and I think he's starting to get it now. I mean, again, it's hard because he's a California guy who's coached most of his life at Utah.
Right.
So impossible to really have expectations that he would just parachute into this and fully understand it. I do think it does kind of take some baptism by fire to now he gets it. Now he understands, you know, what this means to his fan base, where, again, I don't think you possibly can without having kind of immersed yourself in it like he just did or actually playing in it. Like, I can't imagine there was a time where he came to Ohio State's practice and checked on Urban during the week. I can't imagine Urban would let anybody in the building that wasn't affiliated with Ohio State. So, yeah, other than watching it, you know, watching it on television, I can't put too much into this. But I get why Michigan fans can and why Michigan fans do. And going back to the idea that in the over 48-hour span, you had the quarterback one, who they paid a lot of money for, and their brand-new head coach saying similar things that a diehard Michigan fan would not, I think, anger the greater portion of the fan base the way it has.
I'm not sure he has anything to apologize for, but somebody should have maybe prepped him on this and let him know, hey, you know, we understand you haven't been a part of this, but this is a big deal. It's the biggest deal to everyone. And you need to maybe act like it's more of a deal than you're letting on. Like, I understand.
Are you talking about Kyle or Bryce?
Kyle.
Maybe both.
I think
Kyle knows how big it is. He even said it in the answer, guys. He said, don't confuse that with a lack of desire to beat them. You can desire to beat somebody without hating them.
But that wasn't his initial comments. And I guess that would be what the apology is for, is the initial comments. So that's what I'm talking about.
Well, just to refresh that though, Bake, wasn't that didn't he say, I don't hate Ryan Day? I mean, wasn't that the original comments at Big Ten Media Day?
For the most part, yes, and that's right. I'm just saying there's a history of coaches that aren't from these states mm-hmm. and haven't grown up in this rivalry where they don't do well in it, especially at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that can happen. Yeah, that's happened.
And you can try to downplay it and say, oh, it's just another game, but it's not.
I don't think, I mean, that's Underwood, not Whittingham. I don't think Whittingham ever said it's just another game. Underwood said that at the end as like a tagline, right? I think Whittingham has never said that. I think what Whittingham is doing is just being honest to himself. He was asked if he hated Ohio State at Media Days. He's like, well, no, I don't hate. Ryan seemed like a pretty good guy. We played him in a Rose Bowl. He knew Urban, like all of those things. Like, so I think there's a difference between hatred and desire to win. I mean, he went 11-6 in Holy War games, so I think he knows. And here's the thing about it. If you paratroop into Salt Lake City on the week of that game, there's just as much hate in that as there is in Ohio State, Michigan. There's just as much hate in the Iron Bowl as there is in Ohio State, Michigan. Much of these great rivalry games have this. This is just the biggest example of it because it's two massive states with massive population, with incredible history, and two of the five winningest programs of all time. So that's what makes this one just a little bit different than the rest. But there is hate in all of those games. Does a rivalry have to have hate for it to be a great rivalry? Probably needs to have a little. But I also don't think you can manufacture it. And I think it'd be disingenuous of Kyle Whittingham to come up and say he hates Ohio State when he doesn't have any reason to yet. Now, if he loses to him this year, as we all expect, yeah, that kernel of hate is going to start to grow, and it's going to become bigger and bigger and bigger. I think from their perspective, it seems to me like any rational, I understand with fans that's a tough word to use, but it feels like any rational Michigan fan would understand that that is a program coming out of an absolute stink pile of a mess. And that this is going to be a little bit of grace period here with him to kind of get through kind of what the next couple of years look like. And that he's basically a stabilizer on this thing. And he's essentially where they are as a program. This is the price that they paid for what they did. All of it. This was the penance for that. Was that. Is it around here? Is it justified? No, we wanted, you know, national titles taken away and $50 million fines and all of those things. They didn't get any of that. The guy most responsible for it is coaching the LA Chargers on a team that some people think is a dark horse team to make a run at the Super Bowl. I mean, he's living in Southern California, living his best life. So, like, he received no punishment for this at all. A lot of people around the program did. And I think Whittingham's kind of the cleaner in it. So I think he's probably just trying to get a program kind of back on sturdy ground. And he's looking at this thing down here and he's going, good Lord, we're not in that world yet. We're not there yet. He'll grow to dislike it. All of that stuff will happen. I have no problem with anything Kyle Whittingham said. And I would say the same if Kyle Whittingham was coaching at Ohio State. I would. If he had no point of reference on it and I wanted him to just hate, let's just say Ryan Day was coaching at Michigan. Kyle Whittingham comes in here from Utah. I don't expect him to hate the coach of Michigan. He never, I mean, his experiences with him have only been positive. Does not, to me, that does not have anything to do with their will and desire to try to win that game. He knows what that's about. He'll figure it out. Now, you bring up a good point, Bake, and I don't know. Do you have to be from here to truly get it? Maybe. It goes back to one of the things that I say all the time about rivalry games. In order for it to be a rival, they have to take something from you. So we now are coming out of an era where Michigan took a lot from us. We came out of an era in the 90s where Michigan took a lot from us. We had 20 years where they didn't take anything.
Yeah, this is a generation of Buckeye fans that had no idea what the rivalry was because Michigan hadn't done anything in over a decade of consequence. So when Urban rolls seven straight, you've got, you know, when they were kids during Rich Rod and Hoke that became adults, they don't see Michigan as a viable threat. And then now with what Harbaugh injected into this, I think there's, you know, with the Michigan man and coming out of all of that Harbaugh stuff, like there's the millions that were paid to Bryce Underwood. So does a mercenary really care about the program? care about the history and about the traditions. Like, the Michigan man coming out of this has a lot to weigh on and a lot that they did to themselves, but, you know, they've shown to be people that operate in it own, in like their own reality. So it's, I'm not surprised that they took this the wrong way, or that they took this all and made a mountain out of a molehill, because they're insane.
That's kind of where I am with it.
I think both fan bases would do the same thing. I think if Ohio State had a coach that came in and made these comments, I think most of the fan base would do the same thing. And again, Bo, your point is right. Like, Woody and Bo didn't hate each other. They were friends. They had coached together. I don't think that you have to hate the person on the other side of you. It's actually probably better that you respect them and respect their ability on the other side and know that they're just as good as you. And if you don't play your absolute best, that they can beat you. That's what's best, is to have that healthy respect and fear that they can have something from you. The hate part is that just, you have to hate to lose to them. Yes. It's got to be the worst thing in the world that can happen to you outside of losing a family member, is losing to them.
That's it. That's it right there. Hate losing to them. You don't have to hate them. You can want to beat them with all that you got. You don't have to hate them. We went through a decade where hate was everywhere, and it was the nuclear era of the rivalry, quite honestly. One of the guys who ended his run at Ohio State with a pair of gold pants is having a hell of a camp. You'll hear on that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
The Reds are on the Fans' family of stations all season long. If you don't listen, Terry Francona will ride his scooter to your house and yell at you. Your home of the Reds. The Fan. The Fan 2 and the Fan 3.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Weston Air, Heating and Cooling, and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
Connect with the show on X at 971-BFS. Jump in our YouTube chat or just send a raven. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Certainly, homes in Columbus know that August brings those aggressive yellow jackets and wasps. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and your family with Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection, one flat annual fee, regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. As we go around the sports world, Tyvus really chose violence with me. I did the crossover talk with him today, and he asked me, which of the four Buckeyes drafted in the first round would you pick most likely to get a gold jacket? And then conversely, which of the Buckeyes in the first round would you expect to be most likely to not get a second contract with their current team? What are your answers to those two?
Gold jacket, I'm going to go Sonny.
Okay.
Not a second contract with his first team, I'm going to go Carnell.
Okay.
So this is a crazy question because it's just not happening.
Agreed. That's
and
what I told him.
You probably have a more more of multiple of them being Hall of Famers than not getting a second contract. I think Caleb is a lock Hall of Famer. And I can't believe I'm going to say this. But the only reason I am is because they already have a lot of guys that kind of rush the passer, although they have him playing at linebacker, and I would say Arvell Reese.
Yeah.
Because the Giants have a lot of players that are similar in skill set, but they're all getting second contracts with their teams.
Yeah, that's what I said, too. I said I see no scenario where any of those guys, we use the phrase valedictorian to summer school here from time to time.
Neither of you have answered the question, though.
Oh, I did.
To Tyvus and Matt Fontana?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I said Carnell, or I said Caleb, gold jacket, and I said Carnell, not second, but I also said this is like salutatorian, valedictorian at MIT. They're all successful here. There's no chance that any of these guys miss. I just don't see it. My reasoning for Carnell, and Tyvus had the same reasoning as you did, Bake, in terms of just the system. Do they play him in the right spot? So forth and so on. Reese, I was with you with Carnell, and the reason I thought that is just that franchise is a little dysfunctional. You know, could I see a scenario where Cam Ward doesn't hit, and all of a sudden Carnell wants a contract and they don't have a quarterback and they trade him for picks. I could see that. So but I none of it's likely. I mean, I'm trying to bend the truth to get to the real answer on this. You mentioned Arvell. So Peter Schrager was at Giants camp yesterday and was on the Pat McAfee show and had this to say about Arvell Reese.
Arvell Reese looks like RoboCop, dude. He is enormous with huge arms, and he like has this entire look to him where you're like, okay, well, that guy is going to play on the... He's playing inside linebacker next to Terrell Edmonds. They both look like they're absolute beasts in the middle. And what they're saying is Reese doesn't say a word. He doesn't talk. He just is in the facility all day long, studying and getting better, and has been nailing guys, like dominating practices as a rookie. And that's up against Pat Ricard and up against Scadaboo. So I think that's the instant impact I'm looking for. And Reese kind of brings more than just tackles and stats and all that. Guys like Reese and Styles and Downs, they're also culture setters. Mm-hmm. And their guys are telling you it's a new era here. Giants, Washington, and Dallas, all in the NFC East, they need new culture. They need new feel. And I think those three guys really establish it.
He said something about Arvell that when you talk to threes about Arvell, echoed a lot. He echoed it a lot. That Arvell was just mouth shut work. That's all he did. And to the point where, like, even when it came to like NIL stuff, it wasn't like he was saying like, I need a raise. He didn't say any of that. None of it. Didn't even ask for it. It was just like, I'm good. Like, I'm out there getting my work in. And so, when nephew Tyvus chooses violence on a gold jacket and first not to get a contract, the reality is all of these guys are, they're all going to be studs. They're all going to be, that's such an incredible thing that Peter says when he says they're all culture setters. We were so spoiled. We were so spoiled with those guys in that defense last year. And probably tomorrow we'll get into attempting to replace all of that production and all of that leadership and everything that comes with it. But it would be naive of us to think that there isn't going to be some sort of a step back when you lose players of that caliber.
Yeah, it's a matter of they recognize that well enough to go get guys in the portal that have played a ton of college football. And I see that the additions they made in the secondary, you know, are a little, especially of being guys that they can trust to delegate responsibility, or I guess to spread out the kind of responsibilities that you now have mm-hmm. with losing a Caleb Downs, where it becomes, all right, he knew, Caleb Downs had every answer. It felt like Caleb Downs knew everything even before they got the offense got to the line of scrimmage. Well, probably don't have that again because it's a supercomputer, but then you've got guys that have seen so much that can help diagnose it. You know, it wasn't lost on me last week how much communication you heard from all three levels defensively. And I think you're going to need a lot more than that from a lot more guys to try to figure out, to try to be what Caleb Downs was and what he meant. And I don't think we're going to get really a full appreciation until we're a couple more years removed.
It's crazy that you hear Peter Schrager say this about an Arvell Reese, and then you see the highlights from camp, and then you see the highlights from Caleb Downs where he's sticking guys in the run game. He's guarding guys on the outside and they're not getting anywhere on him. Sonny Styles just wrecking things at Commanders camp. Mm-hmm. Carnell Tate making highlight reel catches mm-hmm. every day at Tennessee camp. And yet this Ohio State team is still ranked number one.
I know it, right?
It's the embarrassment of riches that Ohio State has in their football program. And I don't know if you guys saw this. Speaking of all these guys making plays at camp, did you see the catch that Emeka Ebuka had yesterday?
I did.
Where he climbed a ladder and caught a ball one-handed that was just ridiculous. Yeah.
Did you mention, you said Caleb Downs just covering guys in camp. He's not covering guys. He's covering CeeDee Lamb. Can you imagine if in 2015 we had a safety that could have covered like that in 15 with all that talent?
Shame.
Just too bad we didn't have one.
Yeah.
Too bad. I mean, if you had one in 15 that had covered like Downs, maybe go back to back.
Yeah, just, you're not losing a game. Just the talent, that one
just that
area.
One weakness. That one spot that just was a little weak and it kept you from winning back-to-back
titles. I don't want to say they stunk, but, you know.
Pretty average by Buckeye standards.
Not great.
Those safeties back then are back here dancing like there's a pole or something. I don't know.
Oh, very well aware of nephew Tyvus's operation. Yeah, very well aware. Yeah, it's a shame. It really is. We'll do a little higher, lower the second hour coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The NFL preseason begins Thursday for the Bengals. Cincinnati hosts Detroit tomorrow night at 7. Head coach Zach Taylor told reporters yesterday Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and T. Higgins will play in the preseason opener, but in limited spots. Mike Petraglia of the Jungle Roar podcast will join at 11:30 to break down the Bengals preseason. Saturday in Chicago, the Browns battle the Bears. Hear that game on the Fan starting at 1 o'clock. No word yet on who will start at quarterback for Cleveland. Either Shador Sanders or Deshaun Watson. The other quarterback will start next Saturday against Buffalo. In baseball last night, Reds beat the White Sox 5-4 in 10, and Ellie De La Cruz drove in the game-winning run to snap a three-game losing streak. In Detroit, the Tigers beat the Guardians 6-4, and in the minors, the Clippers and Storm Chasers were rained out at Huntington Park. This update is sponsored by Roosters. Roosters is giving away 12 Ultimate Buckeye experiences. We're talking tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first-round postseason game. Register today at roosterswings.com.
Our top men are working on everything except this show.
We have top men working on it right now.
Who? Top men.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a First Friday. Time to get your Hey Guys questions into the fellas at 971BFS. We can also take those in the YouTube chat live coming up in 1 hour from now, 28 minutes from now. Andrew Siciliano, radio voice of your Cleveland Browns, which you can hear right here on The Fan, will join us. We'll talk a little Browns, do a little around the NFL. He's also doing the official Hard Knocks podcast. So, by the way, that's been pretty entertaining. Seahawks are a pretty entertaining group. Mike McDonald, you would he would certainly check the boxes of a guy that you'd follow to freedom, absolutely. Let's kick off the hour with a little higher or lower. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present Higher or Lower.
All right, so outside of the Hall of Fame game, 30 teams begin the preseason starting tomorrow, as you heard there in the update. Cincinnati Bengals are one of those teams, hosting the Detroit Lions at 7. Again, Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, and Dexter Lawrence, limited time in that one. Because it's the eve of preseason for most NFL teams, NFL.com did the preseason power rankings, published it yesterday shortly after noon. This is from Nick Shook, who covers the NFL for the .com. So all 32 teams ranked preseasonally. At number one, the Los Angeles Rams. At number two, the Denver Broncos. You mentioned the third team, the Seattle Seahawks. Mm-hmm. Higher or lower for the defending champions at 3?
I'm not a to-be-the-man-you-gotta-beat-the-man guy. I'm not that guy. I love Flair, but I'm not that guy. I think teams change year to year, and I think it is appropriate that the Los Angeles Rams are number one on this list. They've added Myles Garrett. They're very likely going to add Aaron Donald to a team that I thought was probably the best in the league last year, but Seattle beat him twice in the last month when it mattered most. So, I have no problem with the Rams being number one. To me, they're the appropriate number one. They feel like a super team. I will say, historically, when a team feels like a super team, it usually crumbles. Obviously, an injury to Stafford would do that in a big, big way, but they really have no holes. So I have no issue with the Rams being number one. I think Seattle should be two. I would put Seattle ahead of the Denver Broncos. I would have Seattle 2 on this list. I would drop Denver down a little bit. I'm not as high on Bo Nix as to think that they could be the second best team in the NFL, but the defense is unbelievable. They added Jaylen Waddle. I get all of that. I would just probably take Seattle up one spot and kind of have them there at number two. Nick's so damn smart. He even cites the loss of Kenneth Walker. I get it, but they've kind of prepared for that too. So I think Seattle would be 2 on my list, and I would drop Denver down. But I think number one is correct with the Rams.
So, I know the Seahawks won the Super Bowl last year. I feel the loss, and I know they drafted Jadarian Price, but Charbonnet has not really returned yet from his injury. I think the loss of Kenneth Walker is pretty big for them. He was so huge in that playoff run, making plays for them, making guys miss, breaking tackles. So I think I would bump Seattle down just a couple because I think that that Kenneth Walker departure is huge. What am I missing with the Denver Broncos?
I'm with you.
If you have them sixth, if you have them seventh, I'm totally fine with that. But number two, like what? Mm-hmm. What am I missing with the Denver Broncos here that everybody is in love with them? Is it just Sean Payton? Is it that the defense is so good? Patrick Surtain is so good. Like I don't know what I'm missing. I wouldn't have them number two.
No, and they went 14-3 last year. The Mahomes injury with Kansas City obviously was a part of that. I'm not as high on them as everybody else is either, Bake. You and I see that one similarly.
At number four on this list, the Philadelphia Eagles. At five, Buffalo. Six, Baltimore. Seven, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jeez. At eight, the Cincinnati Bengals. Higher or lower for Cincinnati at eight?
I mean, I'd have Cincinnati four and feel just fine with it. I think Cincinnati's got the best roster in the AFC. I think what everybody's doing with the Bengals, and Shook has them higher than a lot of people do, I think what everybody's doing with Cincinnati is they're saying, well, they're going to have injuries because they always have injuries. But at this point, I don't know that you can prognosticate on injuries. I think at this point, you just would say, well, they're healthy now. And if Cincinnati's healthy with what they've done up front on the defensive side of the ball, the way they've kind of drafted on the back end as well, I'd have Cincinnati way higher on this thing. I would probably bring Philly down. I'd probably have Philly somewhere around 8, 9, 10. He also, to me, has Jacksonville way too high. And I think if there's going to be a little adjustment for Baltimore as well, I would probably drop Baltimore down just a little bit, somewhere in that 8, 9, 10 range. I think Buffalo's in a sweet spot around 5. I'm fine with that. But I think Cincinnati's got to go way up. I'm really bullish on the Bengals.
So 8 is about 3 or 4 spots higher than anybody else has had the Bengals on their preseason rankings this year. Yeah. I would have the Bengals in the top 5. I think the only Bengals fans will tell you a question mark is Zach Taylor and his coaching, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't watch the Bengals enough, I guess, to feel one way or the other on Zach's coaching. To me, the biggest question with the Bengals is, will Joe Burrow have a healthy season? And if he has a healthy season, the improvements they made to that defense, that offensive line sticking together, and the weapons that they have, I feel like makes them a top 5 team.
So this is the NFL's preseason power rankings from Nick Shook of NFL.com. You had the Bengals at 8, the Houston Texans at 9, the Chicago Bears at 10, the Dallas Cowboys at 11, Patriots are 12th, Packers are 13th, Lions 14th, the Kansas City Chiefs at 15th. Higher or lower for KC there?
I'd have him higher. Mahomes is coming off the injury, but he's practicing fully and should be good to go. So I think I'd have Kansas City certainly higher than 15. I think they bounce back in a bigger way than that. I'd probably have him somewhere in the 10 range, something like that. It's probably a little too high for Dallas for my liking. And here's what I would tell you about Nick Shook, the great Nick Shook. It seems like he's putting a lot of onus on if you've got a great defense, because I think he's got Houston maybe a little too high too. He really likes those two AFC South teams with Houston and Jacksonville. I'd take them both down quite a bit. I'd move Kansas City up and kind of roll with that. I think it's probably higher for Kansas City for me for sure.
Okay, before I get into the Kansas City Chiefs here, how in the hell are the New England Patriots 12th? Didn't they just play in the Super Bowl? Don't they have a good young quarterback?
They do.
Like, no offense to Bo Nix, I'm taking Drake May every time. Over, like, why are the Denver Broncos ranked ahead of the New England Patriots? That is... Are the New England Patriots the most disrespected team in football right now? They upgraded at the wide receiver position. Yeah, Stephon Diggs left, but they got A.J. Brown now. They're going to have another year to be in Mike Vrabel's system. How are the New England Patriots not higher than 12th? I don't understand that.
It's a great question.
Bo, I would have the Kansas City Chiefs in my top 5. And I know a lot of people think that they are getting old and they're at the back end of their run, and they are at the back end of their run. But Mahomes is healthy. They got a high draft pick and a cornerback to come in there and replace McDuffie.
Yep.
They brought Kenneth Walker in, and I can't say I think the Seahawks are going to suffer from that and not say the Chiefs are going to benefit. And all of Mahomes' weapons, his receivers, are healthy. I don't know if they've ever had this group of receivers all together once playing healthy with him. And they're going to have a little chip on their shoulder, probably because people are disrespecting them. I think this is a huge bounce back year for the Chiefs.
All right, at 16 on this list, the 49ers, 17 the Los Angeles Chargers, 18 the Vikings, 19 the Colts, 20 the Pittsburgh Steelers. Higher or lower for Pittsburgh at 20?
No, it's about sweet spot for them, I think. I have them right in here. This is about the right spot for them. I like San Francisco a lot more than he does. And I like the Chargers a lot more than he does. Not a lot more, but more. But I think this is about the right spot for Pittsburgh.
I think Pittsburgh is better than the Indianapolis Colts, and I think they're better than the Minnesota Vikings just because I think Aaron Rodgers is better than both of those quarterbacks. So I would have the Steelers a couple spots higher.
At 21 on this list, the Saints, 22 is the Buccaneers, 23 the Carolina Panthers. I know how Bo would vote that one. At 24, the Titans, 25 the Falcons, 26 the Cardinals, 27 the Giants, 28 the Cleveland Browns. Higher or lower for Cleveland at 28?
I think Cleveland's better off than the Giants. I think they're better off this season than the Arizona Cardinals. So I would have them up slightly. Here's the thing in Cleveland, and Andrew Siciliano going to join us in 18 minutes from now. There just is no depth at corner beyond the first two. So, and yesterday in practice, Tevin Campbell did not participate. Denzel Ward wasn't there. So neither, they start to get really thin at linebacker and on the defensive side of the ball, and then it's just wildly unproven at quarterback. Whatever they decide to do there, they have more weapons than they've had since Nick Chubb and Jarvis and Odell, but it's just wildly unproven. Either this version of what Deshaun Watson is wildly unproven, or Shedeur Sanders, whoever wins that job, just wildly unproven at the position. So I think they're probably in the area of where they should be. I just think they're better than both Arizona and the Giants.
So I think maybe you could have the Browns up one or two spots. They're better than the Cardinals. I think they're better than the Jets. They're better than the Miami Dolphins. The Raiders will be interesting, but I think they're a little better than the Raiders. The Commanders at 29th is crazy. I think the Commanders are much better than the 29th team in the NFL. I also don't get the Saints at number 21. I'm not so sure the Saints are any better than the Browns.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair as well. This could be, as you go through that, though, what's going to be interesting is going to be how all of those teams, there are aging teams, you know, like the San Franciscos, the Kansas Cities, these teams that have been around in a while, been relevant, kind of aging, and then these young teams trying to elevate. That's the Patriots, the Broncos, those teams trying to elevate. Like, is this the year that you have the true crossover with some of those operations? We'll see. It's going to be very, very interesting. We do have a quarterback competition with an answer. We get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
retirement from football hits everyone differently. For Devere Posey and Dane Sanzenbacher, it means sitting around watching sports clips on the internet and arguing about them. Search for Didn't Catch That on YouTube and subscribe. Fan weather
from the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Your Wednesday forecast is trending much drier today after we had multiple rounds of severe thunderstorms yesterday. Highs right around the low 80s, and you'll have a light breeze to get you through the rest of the afternoon. But we do still have a chance of seeing some isolated showers and storms continued for your Wednesday forecast. Tonight, trending much drier as well with lows right around the 60s. I'm your 10 Weather Impact meteorologist, Lily Aldridge, 97.1 The Fan.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. 10 feet tall and bulletproof isn't just a saying. It's a way of life. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
And as always, we are proudly brought to you and sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 80 years around the sports world. Quite a bit going on here today. We had this news yesterday that Kyler Murray has been named the starting quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings. been a long, strange trip in the NFL for J.J. McCarthy from the standpoint of drafted in the first round by Minnesota. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah was the general manager at that time. Kevin O'Connell was the coach at that time. They draft him with the idea that he's going to be the dude. And it's crazy, but I was the Vikings were in Cleveland for joint practices. And Kwesi worked in the Browns front office under Andrew Berry. And so Andrew Berry and Kwesi Adofo-Mensah were doing, they were on Cleveland Browns Daily with Nathan and I, and we were talking to them just after the news got out that JJ's knee was cooked. It was right then. It was that day. And the thinking was that the Vikings season was over. Well, Sam Darnold was there. He won a bunch of games. Last year, he won the Super Bowl. So JJ sat out that year. Then you fast forward to next year and you go, okay, well, this is JJ's year. Didn't go well. Had a couple of moments, but didn't go well. And it became pretty obvious from 30,000 feet that Kevin O'Connell maybe was not a big fan of JJ McCarthy, to the point that obviously, inevitably, he got benched. And then in the really strange twist of all of this, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah was fired as the general manager of the Minnesota Vikings, in part because from the outside looking in, it seemed like they chose McCarthy over Darnold, and that's a pretty bitter pill to swallow when Sam Darnold at 3 years, $100 million, which is a bargain for a starting quarterback, leads the Seattle Seahawks to the Super Bowl. So that's the backdrop of all of this. When we were at the Combine, it was plainly obvious that Kyler Murray should go to Minnesota. If he had something left in the tank, that's the place to go. With all of the weaponry that they have, playing in a dome, all of it, it just checked every single box for him. I'm not at all surprised that he won the job. I think that the talent with Kyler has kind of always been there. The question is, can he play in the structure of a Kevin O'Connell offense? That'll be something that will kind of remain to be seen there. I would also say that if you're going to do something like that, it is easier to start Kyler, and if it doesn't go well, pivot to JJ, than it would be to do the opposite, to start JJ and pivot to Kyler. So this would allow for JJ to watch. I saw the tweet from Schefter about forced to sit another year, and that got a great deal of attention yesterday because, of course, Schefter went to Michigan and JJ went to Michigan. I don't know if JJ would be on the trade block. My guess is they're probably not quite ready to go down that road yet. And I'm curious to see what the answer to that would be if he is. This is what we do know. We are in an era now, and this has been going on for the better part of a decade, where our give up on first round picks is quicker than it's ever been. There was an era previous to this where it was, you'd get 3 or 4 or 5 years in an operation as a first round pick at quarterback to kind of find your way. We're done with that. And Sam Darnold is probably the cautionary tale of don't give up too soon, because about 4 teams gave up on Sam Darnold. So you can do quarterback rehabilitation. The thing that's a little interesting here is one of the people who is credited for being a quarterback rehabilitator is Kevin O'Connell. And apparently he can't stand J.J. McCarthy as a player.
I'm interested in what happens with that quarterback room that does have Carson Wentz in it as well. August 30th is the 53-man roster cut deadline. For you guys, who do you think it's more likely that stays on that roster, J.J. McCarthy or Carson Wentz?
Probably JJ now. But if Kevin has, and this is something only like a beat guy, like hopefully we'll get when we get a Minnesota guy on for 2-a-days, they would have an idea of how Kevin feels about JJ. It doesn't mean that he despises him, that he's just chosen other players over him. And none of this is personal. It's just like the player. Are they not jiving?
You got a Justin Jefferson window.
Yes.
That has to, and it makes,
it's got to be going.
It goes back to like Aaron Rodgers trying to pick a team other than Pittsburgh, and he wanted to go to Minnesota more so than he wanted to stay in Pittsburgh because of, you know, the talent that they have. Mm-hmm. And JJ just didn't fit the bill. I just think watching, and anybody that put eyeballs on JJ as a quarterback said this isn't it in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
But Kyler is an interesting option because there are also a lot of people that are like, yeah, this also isn't it, to your point about the structure and what KOC wants to do, and what Kyler Murray oftentimes says, here's what I'm going to do.
I can't see the Vikings giving up on J.J. McCarthy just yet, in the fact that former first-round pick, maybe they feel like they could get something for him. I don't know how much they're going to get for Carson Wentz at this point. Right. So I would think they would keep a hold of JJ and hope that maybe somebody has some quarterback injuries or whatnot, and maybe they can turn that into some kind of a pick, even if it's a fourth or fifth round pick. So I would think it's JJ. I would also, and it hasn't looked good for him, I would also just look at the Sam Darnold story and say, maybe it's just going to take him a little longer. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be in the league for quite some time longer, getting chances, just because maybe we can recreate that magic that Seattle has done with Sam Darnold, or maybe they can recreate the Baker Mayfield magic. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But
yeah, and I think it's human nature for guys like Kevin O'Connell, guys like Todd Monken, who have been in the league and have seen Kyler Murray be an incredibly effective NFL player. Pretty sure Kyler Murray made a Pro Bowl at one point. He was a nightmare in the red zone to deal with, and was a pretty dang good player to the point that he got a big, big contract in Arizona. Now, injuries happen. That franchise is pretty dysfunctional. Two-time Pro Bowler, Reese?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's done it. And I think the same thing can be true of if you're Todd Monken looking at the Brown situation and going, boy, Deshaun Watson, he led the NFL in passing. That was a long time ago, but he led the NFL in passing. I know that he's done that versus Shedeur Sanders, who at this point in his career obviously has not done something like that. So I think there's a human nature thing in coaches that go, this guy's scaled a mountaintop before. There's reasons why he's not on the top of the mountain anymore, but I know that he's done it, which leads me to believe that he can do it again. And I think there's a human nature in that kind of comes with it. On Browns camp yesterday, it was a Deshaun Watson day with the ones. Today, theoretically, will be a Shedeur Sanders day with the ones. Deshaun got the majority of the reps with the ones as it was his day. They were in pads. The noteworthy things, no Denzel Ward. He was not at practice yesterday at all. I'm guessing Monken will have some answers for that coming up when he has his availability before practice today. Tyson Campbell, the other corner, was out. So when those two are out, the drop off to corner gets pretty bad. Then Mathis went out. It sounds like he's going to be done for the year. So he had a big injury. So that cornerback room was kind of really ravaged yesterday. And really one of the strengths of this team is now the wide receiver room. So Denzel Boston, your starting X, Casey Concepcion, Jerry Judy. There's some weaponry now for them, and so the offense should be able to have their way. Deshaun threw an absolutely brutal interception early on in practice. It was just a bad read, and he tried to force it into a bunch of traffic deep down the field, and it was picked off. After that, I was curious how he'd respond, and he responded very well and ended up making probably three or four big time throws as the 7-on-7 and 11-on-11 portions of practice continued. And it was very reminiscent of the practice he had a week ago today where he really looked like he was going. He's still turning the ball over. It's a bad read. Can't have it. But all indications over the last week are that it is trending that Deshaun Watson is probably in the front of that. Now, what's the timeline? You guys are both Browns fans. If Todd Monken knows it, do you want him just to go with it, or yes, do you need to see more?
No, if Monken knows it, I'd honestly, with Monken and the experience that he has and as much football as he's seen, go with your gut, man. At this point, trust the gut. Go with it. Yeah. All the reps for QB1 or who you think's going to be that starter September 13th against Jacksonville. There's not really a whole lot of time to be doing this rep thing. One day it's yours, one day it's his. No, yeah. if you know now, go with the guy.
I'm 1,000% with you on that, Reese. If this is the guy, give him the reps.
They're two very different players, too. So, like, the offense is going to be slightly different. It's all the offense, but the way you're going to call it, the way you're going to prepare it is going to be different depending on which guy it is. So I think we're all kind of with you guys. It'd be interesting to see what it is. I remind everybody, the date I think to pay attention to is a week from tomorrow. That is the Thursday joint practice against the Buffalo Bills. Whoever takes the majority of the reps there, I would say, is in the clear driver's seat to be the starting quarterback, at least to start the season. A guy who's observed all of this. I think he's been at every single day of training camp up in Cleveland. It's our good buddy, Andrew Siciliano. He'll join us in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
The perfect show for quarter zips and khaki shorts. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time to head out on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. Talk to our great friend of the program, the great Andrew Siciliano, radio voice of your Cleveland Browns. You can hear the Browns and the Bears here on a Saturday right here on The Fan. Of course, also the official podcast of Hard Knocks, Yahoo Sports as well. He's got more jobs than I do, which is rare, but you do, my friend. Hey, but also Los Angeles resident.
Good morning.
This is crazy news out of L.A. for our audience. This just happened. You put it in one of the text chains that we're on. The Lakers have been sold for the second time in 2 years. Did this thing come completely out of the blue for you as someone who resides in Southern California?
I would like to say co-resident of Ohio and California, but
fair,
good morning.
I mean,
I didn't see this coming. Granted, I am kind of out of the NBA news loop, but everyone's acting surprised. And you say 2 years, really, it's been like 14 months. Like the Mark Walter Group closed on the Lakers, I think last June. And that valuation, now they didn't buy the whole thing. They bought the majority. They bought the controlling interest from the Buss family. So ending, you know, their majority share and interest of that franchise for decades for like a $10 billion valuation. So, you know, they're like home flipping shows. This is a franchise flipper at what looks like at a minimum a 20% $2 billion profit in a year.
Man. And Walter owns the Dodgers for the audience as well. He's part of that group as well. So, like, but this is an incredible thing that happened. So, some breaking news on the NBA side of thing, and as so someone who's a co-resident,
I think co-resident.
That's right. You summer and fall in Ohio. That's true.
Yes, I'm coming to you live from Middleburg Heights.
Beautiful, buddy. Hey, you are one of the people, along with the people who are true employees. You haven't missed anything. You've watched every single down of every single camp. Quarterbacks, what have you seen?
I don't know that I've seen a clear winner, and I know that kind of sounds like I'm ducking it and taking the company line. I'm not. Bo, you're out there every day, too. There have been really good days from both of these quarterbacks, really good days where you walk out of there going, all right, I think that was it. I think the tide is turning. But neither Deshaun nor Shador has been able to consistently stack a number of good days back to back to back. And that's really what you need. Look, operationally, Deshaun, who's been in this league 9 years, is going to be better. He's been in multiple offenses. He's had multiple systems and multiple coaches. He's the veteran quarterback. He can get the play called, get out of the huddle on time, get to the line, get everyone lined up, get the motion, get the protection, and let's go. And Shador, I think with each day he gets better, I think with actually each rep and each series within a given practice, he gets better. But he's also a second-year quarterback in a brand-new system, and a guy that a year ago today was really only getting the hungry dog rookie reps at the end of camp. So he has a longer way to go. He asked me to forecast it right now. I don't know. I think logically you give the edge to the veteran because he is the veteran. But I can't wait to see what Shador does in the preseason game when he does get his start, as has been promised.
Yeah, and the other thing this is the thing that's a little tricky about all of this, and you and I and Nathan talk about this all the time. You talked about that rhythm, a guy getting a rhythm. Well, the way that this is going, and I do think this is a completely equitable, fair way to do it, where you get a day, I get a day, but at the same time, it's hard for them to stack days. Because, for example, yesterday was a Deshaun day, and it started off kind of so-so. He threw that bad interception into all the traffic, and then he had a really good middle portion of practice where he was really spinning it and made the most impressive throws. Meantime, Shador did not have those. Now, you're not entitled to reps. It's the head coach to decide who gets the reps, but it is difficult at that position especially, and this is something we talk about all the time, for you to be able to stack days when it's rare that they even have two consecutively.
Yeah, it makes it challenging. And, you know, in Minnesota yesterday, they declared the winner. I don't think it's a surprise. It was Kyler Murray, again, the veteran here who won the job. But the Vikings have already declared the winner and said, let's get on with getting ready for the season. Browns have yet to do that. I found it interesting. Our mutual friend Nathan Zagura, the great Nathan Zagura, did the Todd Monken show last night. His first coach's show is we're in a game week. And Monk said he wants to get the starters, and they're each going to get a game. He wants to get each of the quarterbacks a full quarter in an ideal world, maybe even a half. He said he would like to get them a 2-minute drill, but how do you get a 2-minute drill? But just pull him after a series, or he wants to keep him out there. But a lot depends on what Ben Johnson does with his front seven and his starters. Like, if they're going to, you know, go third string or third team O-line right out of the gate, or D-line, then what do you do? And if they keep their first team D-line out there, which I think is highly unlikely considering their injury situation, then you keep your O-line out there if you're Monken a little bit longer. But anyway, short version of that story is we are likely, and I think it's a good thing, going to see a lot of these quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get a body of work to make a decision. But you and I both know the most important day in training camp of, I would say, the entire offseason for this team, save for the draft, is the 20th, is a week from tomorrow when they do the joint practice with the Bills.
That's it. That's you it. And I have been talking about that. I've talked about it here on this program as well. Like, that's, if you want to know, like, if they haven't made a decision by then, that'll be the day you know. If there's somebody who gets the majority of them and they perform at a decent level, that's the way that this thing's going to go. And we talked about this yesterday, buddy. I think audience and fans have to remember, like, this, quote, competition has been going on since March. I mean, really since Monk got hired. Like, this has been months. It's not just the last couple of weeks that training camp has been going on. It's been going on for a very long time. While that is the headliner, obviously, always, there was a pretty big negative development yesterday in terms of at the cornerback position. Now, we don't think that there's anything long term, but it did kind of illustrate the incredible lack of depth that the Browns have at the cornerback position specifically. You could argue linebacker can get a little dicey, too, once you get past those top two. Just kind of from your perspective, alarm bells on just kind of some of the guys who have been missing. And quite honestly, buddy, we've been out several defensive tackles for a long time.
Yeah, a little less concerned about defensive tackle. I think Mike Hall's coming back, and I don't know Malik Collins' exact timetable, but he'll get there, and hopefully he returns to the form where I think last year he was not only on Pro Bowl path, but all pro path, although it's hard, certainly, because a lot of that is on reputation, but he was playing great. Corner is an issue. Across the board, you have as good a tandem, like your starters, full secondary. Your starters, I would put up against anyone's starters with Campbell, with Ward, and with the two safeties, with Ron, actually three safeties with Emmanuel McNeil Warren, now the rookie. Behind that, it's dicey. Miles Harden looks to be your third corner, your nickel corner right now. He got progressively better after a very rocky start to last season. I think by the end of the year, he was playing well. But beyond that, I don't know. I'm just doing my boards right now, and I think for fans watching the game, and I don't know who's going to be up and healthy for the game, but watching the game on Saturday or listening, it might be a veritable who's he at corner. Like undrafted rookie free agents and guys claimed off waivers the last couple of weeks. It is thin back there. With the Damari Mathis injury, you are kind of hoping and praying that a veteran who's coming off a torn ACL but still a young player with some draft pedigree could be that fourth guy. Now he's out for the year. They wasted no time. He got carted off yesterday. He was on IR within an hour. Mm-hmm. So his season is over. They need some help back there.
These rookie receivers are good, aren't they?
They're fun. Mm-hmm. They're fun. Like, there was a rep inside. I'm losing track of days. It's today, Wednesday. There's a rep inside Monday. We're speaking of corners. He ran a little outcut, and Trey Avery fell down. It was one of those, hey, ankle breaking, oh man, did you see that kind of plays. I'm talking Casey Concepcion. I'm sorry. Yep. He ran an outcut that was just beautiful. He loses guys off the line. He loses guys at the top of the route. He's got crazy quicks. And there's a catch on Saturday that's kind of gone viral. Cam Justice at News 5 had a great angle of it. Look at her Twitter, where he made a fingertip grab over the middle in traffic that was just ridiculous. And then there's Denzel Boston, who should have been a first-round pick, and has the size and the attitude. He's already in as a starter. He is the dude. I mean, look, it's early, but they are fun, and I think that's the most important thing. This offense should be fun.
Talking to the great Andrew Siciliano, radio voice here, Cleveland Browns. I'll get you out of here on this one. You told me in advance of right around the debut of Hard Knocks, of course, you host the companion podcast, Mike McDonald's going to be a star, and boy, is he. You weren't wrong, brother. Man, you can see how that guy led a team to a Super Bowl in year one. This is a really entertaining addition to Hard Knocks. I'm really enjoying it.
So I thought last night's episode was as good a Hard Knocks episode as we have seen in a long, long time. And it opens with Mike McDonald throwing Derek Hall, who's a guy they drafted a couple of years ago, the Seahawks, developed. They gave him a second contract. He had a sack in the Super Bowl. He is a personality and one of the stars of this show. He kicked Derek Hall out of practice after warning him, you're getting too close to the quarterback. Don't touch the quarterback. And after a second time in the backfield, he kicked him out, and Hall's complaining. And Mike McDonald, mild-mannered on the podium, says, basically, I don't care, get out of here. And with some bleep bombs, says, like, no, you don't understand. I'm the guy running practice. Get the bleep out of here. There's great stuff with him and Mitch Johnson, the Spurs head coach who visited for a day. This episode was so good as well because the Seahawks pull back the curtain and you see John Schneider, the GM, workshopping, hey, if we sign Terrion Arnold with all these felonies over his head, how do we frame this? And then he's talking to Jalen Milroe and then he's kind of pitching it to McDonald. And then you actually see at the end of this episode, the workout with Terrion Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cliffhanger. Like, here's this great team. We've been talking about their culture, McDonald's culture. They won the Super Bowl because of this culture. Now do they upset the culture and sign this guy? It was like, it was really, really good filmmaking. And Mike McDonald, to me, is the star.
I couldn't agree with you more. You're always a star in my book, buddy. Thanks for your time. I'll see you later this afternoon.
Thank you, bud. Are you going, let's coordinate, are you going quarter zip? Are you doing golf shirt? What are you doing?
Hoodie. I'm going to go hoodie, okay. Hoodie, golf short. Yeah. Hoodie, golf short.
Browns hoodie or golf?
It's light blue at the moment.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Just need to coordinate. Okay.
All right, buddy. See ya.
See you soon.
Bye. There he goes. Mr. Siciliano. Radio voice, your Cleveland Browns that you hear right here on The Fan. You'll be able to hear the Browns and the Bears on Saturday right here on The Fan. Thing or not a thing coming up next, Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
With Skip Mossick.
Saturday, we'll visit with former OSU great John Cook. Plus, we'll head to Memphis and talk PGA Tour playoffs with Golf Channel's Ron Cyrak.
Tita Green with Skip Mossick. Saturday mornings at 9 on The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. The best facial hair on the air. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a first Friday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
So in October of last year, Mark Walter, who is the CEO of the Guggenheim Partners, part of the ownership group that includes the Los Angeles Dodgers, bought the controlling stake in the Los Angeles Lakers at a $10 billion valuation. Well, as you may have heard this morning, Ramona Shelburne of ESPN had the news that Walter is selling the Los Angeles Lakers to the duo of former Disney CEO Bob Iger and Josh Kushner, American businessmen of, yes, that Kushner family, for a record $12.5 billion. Pretty good, you know, make out of Mark Walter in just a couple of months. Sportico had the numbers, I think it was 2 months ago, that the Warriors were the highest valued NBA franchise at $11.3 billion. So this exceeds that. Shelburne's reporting has that Eisner and Kushner were looking at an expansion franchise in Las Vegas, then over the last week made this aggressive bid for the LA Lakers. Thing or not a thing?
So here, just in the last couple of minutes, Bill Simmons, who's pretty dialed in on all things NBA, says, tweeted, Kushner Iger weren't sure they could get the Vegas expansion team, so they pivoted to buy Walter's majority Lakers stake, around 78%, for like $9.5 billion, and got an iconic NBA franchise. Still most shocking NBA sale in a long time. The Lakers got flipped. Yeah, it's stunning. It's a stunning turn of events. I guess all of our assumption was that the Guggenheim Group and Walter, who owned the Dodgers, would own the Lakers, and they would walk hand in hand on all of this. But this is a $2 billion profit, about like that, for Walter in a year. Pretty dang good return on investment. Just conspiracy bow for a second. You think maybe Walter's like, gosh, it's much easier to win in this baseball thing. this NBA thing can be tough. Like, we got Luka, but we got this hard cap. We can't retain LeBron. We can't pay for guys because we can only pay for so many guys. We had to pay Austin Reeves. Like, we can't compete with Oklahoma City and San Antonio. Like, it is an iconic franchise, but it's hard to imagine a championship there anytime soon. Meantime, I've got this Dodgers thing that's pretty easy. We just keep doing what we're doing over here. That was in my head. I just thought, gosh, I can make $2 billion and I can pivot out of, you know, owning one of the two iconic NBA franchises in order to make a bunch of money, and I'll just put my attention on the Dodgers. But it's a fascinating story.
$2 billion in 14 months. Pretty good work. Pretty good. If you can find it. I didn't even realize. I don't know where I was. Maybe I was out. I didn't realize the Lakers got sold, and this is the second time they've been sold in the past 18 months. I had no clue that the Buss family, I don't remember that at all. Like I said, maybe I wasn't here for those shows or whatnot, but I didn't realize that they had even been sold once. I think the thing in that, Sportico said that the Golden State Warriors were worth more than the Lakers. How is that even possible?
They own their stadium.
Newest stadium, I think, in the league. The Chase Center is?
Yeah.
So the Lakers lease their...
Yeah, that with Staples.
The Staples.
Yeah.
I guess that makes a little sense, but still, you would think that the Lakers, that brand, is just so iconic and powerful. I would think you would also almost believe that the Knicks would be, like, number two just because of the market and whatnot, but I guess that's different. Maybe it'd be different now after them winning a championship. But good job out of this, out of the Walter, what'd you say, the Guggenheim group?
Yeah.
For making that money that fast.
Yeah, Jimmy Dolan will sell the Lakers or sell the Knicks when they pry it out of his cold, dead hands.
Yeah.
Wonder what the valuation of that franchise or what it would go for. Because the Knicks are third on this Sportico NBA valuation list at $9.85 billion.
Well, you also get Madison Square Garden. He also owns the Rangers and he owns the venue.
Yeah. So that's probably most if we were to do an honest assessment. But if I'm James Dolan, I'm not interested in telling you what all that is worth. Choose your adventure here. The case for AB in the Hall of Fame or more NBA news as it relates to LeBron and Christmas?
You could do AB.
On the Speakeasy podcast with former Eagle LeSean McCoy, Shady tried to make the case that AB should be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
AB should be on there, though. Because, like, this might sound crazy, but Jerry Rice or AB, I mean, like, yo, I'm taking AB.
Jeez.
What
did you just say?
Jerry Rice or Antonio Brown? I'm taking Antonio Brown.
Keep going.
I don't care.
Thank you guys for watching the Speakeasy.
Boys out the mud. We got LeSean McCoy.
What?
Bro, y'all,
I'm not going to get distracted.
Y'all can't. All right, that's one. Two is y'all acting like, what am I saying wrong? What can Jerry Rice do that AB can't do? Everything.
Jerry Rice got, what, three Super Bowls?
What?
He bumped got the Super Bowl.
22,000 yards.
Bumped the Super Bowl.
He's got,
Jerry Rice
he had a 1,000-yard receiving season at 40. 42, bro. Like, 42.
Yo, my man. You don't think AB can do that? See, y'all talking like that because AB's career.
Yes, your career makes you.
Okay.
Antonio Brown is eligible for the Hall of Fame in their class of 2027. Thing or not a thing?
That's just stupid. That's just so ignorant. Just leave Jerry Rice. Here's the problem. This is what I would say to aspiring, and I suppose LeSean McCoy is more than aspiring in that he has a podcast of some level of popularity. You lose your argument with the ignorant comment of bringing in Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice is on a list with Jim Brown and Lawrence Taylor as the greatest football player ever, ever, regardless of position. He's on that list. So just leave that out of it and then make the Antonio Brown case, which is a pretty good case. It's a pretty good case. He's a multiple-time first-team All-Pro. The Hall is supposed to kind of leave out the off-field stuff, which with him is a lot. You know, they're not social, they're not political social polices. That's not what it is. It's what you did on the field. So on the field, he's really close, honestly, very close. But you lose us as soon as you bring in Jerry Rice into the equation, which is just utterly insane.
These are Antonio Brown's career stats. 928 receiving receptions, 12,291 receiving yards and 83 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Very good numbers. These are Jerry Rice's career stats after the age of 30. 939 career receptions after 30, 12,622 yards, and 94 touchdowns.
Yeah.
But we talked yesterday about clicks versus coverage.
Yeah.
This is the problem when you say something so stupid and outlandish that you lose the point you're trying to make. And his point isn't terrible. Antonio Brown was great. He had a six-year span that was awesome, and he would do everything on the football field for you. As much as I hate the Pittsburgh Steelers, I loved watching him play football when he was at his best. But now, nobody wants to believe your argument because you said something so foolish.
100%. Yep. Yeah, he lost the forest through the trees. Yeah, just on Antonio Brown, guys, real quickly, four-time first-team All-Pro, seven-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion. That sounds like a Hall of Famer. I mean, that's kind of Hall of Famer-ish. There's no question you could say, for a certain point, Antonio Brown's the best at his position in the league for a stretch, certainly on a very short list. So he probably is a Hall of Famer, but you just lose it when you say something as silly as putting Jerry Rice's name in it. That's just utter nonsense. Jerry Rice had like a 20-some touchdown season in the middle of the 80s when you could dock guys' receivers' heads off. And you had to worry about guys like Steve Atwater taking your head off. Like, and he did that then. So just stop with that. You lost us all with that. Final hour on a first Friday. Mike Petraglia going to join us on the Bengals coming up at 11:30. We kick it off with a little Hey Guys. That is next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Less than a year after being sold by the Buss family, the Lakers are being dealt again. Former Disney CEO Bob Iger and Josh Kushner have claimed the Lakers for $12.5 billion, a new record in North American sports. The now previous owner, Mark Walter, bought the Lakers in October of last year at a $10 billion valuation. ESPN says Kushner and Iger were looking into an expansion team in Vegas, then pivoted to Los Angeles. In the NFL, the Bengals begin the preseason tomorrow night, hosting the Lions at 7. Zach Taylor says Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins will play in that game, but in limited action. The Browns open the preseason at the Bears on Saturday. It'll be either Shedeur Sanders or Deshaun Watson to make the start. Hear Browns preseason football right here on The Fan Saturday at 1 o'clock. This update is sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Locally inspired dishes and award-winning cocktails. Visit highbankco.com and make your reservation today. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
The friends are the guests and listeners. Reeser and Baker just work here.
Back to work, everybody. Work.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour on a First Friday Miracle Edition of the program. Get your officially endorsed coming up at 11:48. Mike Petraglia coming up in 27 minutes from now on the Bengals side of things as they debut in preseason play tomorrow night. We kick off the hour with a little bit of Hey Guys. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present. Nothing is off limits. Your participation is required. Just use the hashtag HeyGuys and ask anything you want. Do it now.
Sponsored by Rose Pest Solutions.
I just saw this in our YouTube chat, and Buckeye Chuck is scratching me where I itch. Hey guys, Ohio Stadium needs a complete overhaul. What's the percentage of the existing stadium that needs to be kept that the fans would expect? The bell tower, the rotunda, and gut the rest?
We had, Reese, I can't remember if you were in this incarnation of the program or if it was Threes and I at that point, but we had an architect from Cincinnati who was a Buckeye grad who sent us like what he would do with the shoe. I still have it in my email somewhere. It's really fascinating. But, you know, he had all this plans of like connecting south, you know, the south stands with the rest of it. And so that it was all an inclusive experience. I mean, we had Ross Bjork on with us on Friday and we talked about the shoe and he said something to the effect of, look, we're always going to be improving the shoe. And it goes to that line the great John Cooper told me, you buy an old house, you're buying an old house. In other words, you're always going to be fixing it. I don't know how. I think it's the most complicated thing on Ross's plate. And I say that acknowledging that Ross is trying to navigate college football and college athletics in 2026. But I think the shoe is really tough. I think it's a really tough one because you're at a point now where folks demand for their in-stadium experience has never been greater. The shoe is still magical, but it also is old and rickety, and it needs a bunch of investment. And in order to make money off of it, there's money you have to put into it. So, yeah, clock tower for sure. I mean, let's just say we lived in a dream world, the dream world where everybody had money and everybody Scrooge McDuck swimming in gold coins. You would probably close it and build a modern horseshoe is probably what you would do. And you'd have a rotunda and you'd have a clock tower and you'd have it be new, but retro feeling. That's probably what you could do. But this is a state university, and building a stadium is a $2 billion minimum, probably, if you try to do something like that, $5 billion process. So you're just going to keep putting Band-Aids on this thing over and over again. But yes, all of the things that he mentioned are critical to that you'd want to keep. You want to keep all of those things, and I think that they will. I think this is a complicated one. I don't even know if I answered his question. I don't even know. Yes, keep the rotunda, keep the clock tower, for sure. But remember, it was initially a horseshoe. It's not really a horseshoe anymore. I mean, it kind of sort of still is from the top. But, I mean, with the south stands there, that part of it's kind of gone anyway. So, it's complicated is the long and short of it.
So, I believe most fans would accept nothing less than keeping the shell. They would want to keep the whole shell of the horseshoe and then just redo everything inside. I don't think that's cost effective at all. No. And I don't think, quite frankly, Bo, as you, I don't think Ohio State should worry about the fans in this. Because I don't think Ohio State wants to be going on the road and playing games elsewhere. So I would build a brand new one, a replica, at some point. When you get to that point, I don't know if you're at that point yet or not. And I think the shoe is, like, protected under some historical...
It is, yeah.
...rules, so you couldn't bulldoze the shoe. You could use it for other purposes. I don't know where you would put the stadium. I don't know where you get it so it's accessible to everything and kids on campus and walking distance right. And all of that, but... Buildings go away. There's going to be a time when Wrigley goes bye-bye. There's going to be a time when Fenway goes bye-bye. There's going to be a time where Madison Square Garden goes bye-bye, and we already saw Yankee Stadium go away. So eventually, Father Time is undefeated even for stuff like this. The shoe's going to have to go bye-bye at some point.
Reese, go ahead, and then I have something popped into my head. Go ahead, your thoughts on the question.
Well, I think you all know my thoughts on the question.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, the most important thing for me were to be to keep that rotunda. Mm-hmm. But I think with it being as old as it is, there's only a certain amount, it's only a matter of time before you've got to rethink it. Like, you can build again as long as it keeps that shape. It's going to have to come down at some point. Now, that might be 20, 30 years down the road, but it can't stay the way it is forever. You can keep trying, but eventually the conversation will be have to had, and there will be a conversation about what you do even with the historic marker that's on it, because this is still going to have to house 80, 90,000 people on consistent Saturdays in the fall, and then what they want to do with it out of football season, it's going to dictate, like, you want more concerts, you want more things, mm-hmm. it's got to be amenable, and that just doesn't come with small fixes.
No, and I was thinking about this because when you mentioned Wrigley, what cathedrals are left? Wrigley, Fenway, Lambeau-ish, not really. I mean, that's not original Lambeau.
The Rose Bowl.
I mean, Michigan Stadium's in a hole, so it's like they basically just have a hole that they built stuff around. It's not like a standing above the ground structure. Like, how many old cathedrals are left? I mean, the shoe is one of them. I mean, am I missing some obvious ones? There might be something I'm missing. I can't think of any.
I don't know how much it's used, but the LA Coliseum is still standing, correct?
That's a good one.
Yep, that's a good one.
I just keep going to like the Rose Bowl and the LA Coliseum, and I say, well, those are historical, and they've done a lot to keep it. The Coliseum gets, what, 30% tarped off on USC football Saturdays? The Rose Bowl, you can hear a pin drop when the Bruins play football. This cathedral that we have in Columbus seats 90,000 plus consistently. And it just, the use of it is so much more than some of those other buildings, even with NFL stadiums that are kind of old. The capacity at Ohio Stadium is consistently used.
The historical part of it's going to be a tricky one, too. You know, I mean, even if you put like an exoskeleton and tried to keep, again, it goes back to the John Cooper line.
They do that already.
They've done it already. and honestly, like, an old house is an old house. I've always thought that, to me, like, if they were going to try to keep it and maximize the revenue that could be created off of it, that at some point, like, all of B-Deck goes away and that all becomes suites. Because, you know, a lot of that seating isn't great anyway. So is that something where you take that entire B-Deck and make it all suites and you sell those for a premium and your capacity comes way down to, like, 80? But you have a premium experience for all. I mean, this is one of the boom towns in America, for crying out loud. And there's more Buckeye alumni than ever. There's plenty of people can afford it. I saw this when I was down in Tallahassee this spring, and I saw what Florida State was doing to Doak. I mean, they played 1 year down there, and Doak Campbell was built probably 30 years ago. I mean, it's a spectacular. Do a Google search. If you're in front of a computer, just look at what Doak Campbell Stadium looks like. It's stunning what they've done with it. It looks like Camelot. But they closed it, a portion of it, for a year so that they could renovate one entire side because they had to find ways to create more revenue, so they needed more premium seating. So, like, that's the same thing Ross has got to do. That's why you're going to have seats in the south stands now. Like, that's part of that, too. So it's a tricky one.
This is such an interesting conversation because we want to hold on to these historical things, but yet a pro stadium becomes 20 years old and we're like, I got to get rid of it. Ain't good enough anymore. On to the next one.
Dude, the Braves built Turner Field for the 96 Olympics. They're out of it.
It's already gone.
The Georgia Dome was opened in the early 90s. Gone. The Rangers are in, what, their third stadium in the last 30 years?
Look at the Cleveland Browns. Stadium was built in, what, 1999? Yeah. They're already late moving 90s. On.
So yeah. I think the Big Red Rebuild, Big Red Rebuild, they're doing it in Nebraska, I think might be somewhat applicable to Ohio Stadium, where you have a fan base that constantly sells that place out.
Yeah.
They're going to have the South and West Seating Bowl just demolished.
Oh, so is that what they're doing?
That's what Nebraska's doing. So they're going to have this season, and then likely in the next season, they're going to have a third of that stadium unavailable.
That real quick, and we'll continue with the Hey Guys after this quick timeout. When Ross was on with us last week, did you guys also pick up where he talked about, like, St. John and all of that, mm-hmm. and, like, that corridor?
I definitely heard it.
Like, what do you got to do? Like, there's this corridor that they can't really use. Like, what do you do with that?
Real quick on your thing, Reese. Can Ohio State, in today's landscape, afford to lose 30,000 tickets and the money that comes from that?
Here's what they could do. When the new Brown Stadium gets built, they could play some home games up there.
The show can go on the road.
You could do that
for
a year.
But that's going to cost you as well. Like, you can't.
It is.
I don't know.
That's why they're saying $500 million.
I would just build
And I'm thinking to myself, it's going to be a little bit more than that.
I would find somewhere on campus. I don't know where that is, but I would find somewhere and build new. And once it's ready to go, you can switch operations.
Andy says bulldoze the shot and put the shoe there.
Well,
it's good practice.
There are bad ideas. That's not one of them.
We'll continue with Hey Guys coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on
the Fan has a secret radio station. It's called The Fan 2. You can listen to The Bob and Tom Show, Jim Rome, and Buckeye Stuff. Why do they pay me big money to whisper? The Fan 2 is on The Fan's HD2 channel and streaming on The Fan app. You're welcome. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Your Wednesday forecast is trending much drier today after we had multiple rounds of severe thunderstorms yesterday. Highs right around the low 80s, and you'll have a light breeze to get you through the rest of the afternoon. But we do still have a chance of seeing some isolated showers and storms continued for your Wednesday forecast. Tonight, trending much drier as well with lows right around the 60s. I'm your 10 Weather Impact meteorologist, Lily Aldridge, 97.1 The Fan.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan.
When General Sherman marched through Georgia, he was listening to this show.
Use your skills for good, young warrior.
This is Bishop and Friends.
Mike Petrangelo is going to join us coming up in 11 minutes on the Bengals as they open preseason play tomorrow night. Time to return to the Hey Guys. Hit it, fellas.
So JB had this question in the YouTube chat. He goes, hey guys, and he remarks that he should have asked this right after, Bo, your trip to Montana. But his question is, what part of your adult self do you most closely resemble your dad? He says, personally, he has a love of history that he got from his father.
Oh, man. For all of the differences that I have with my father, which there are, it's a long and distinguished list. The one thing I would say is I think it was very important for him that he raised us to be, you know, good men, good fathers, good husbands, all of that type of thing. I think he and my mother set a very strong group of guidelines with which we were going to live our life. There was a great deal of discipline. It was a great deal of making sure that we weren't punks. So I've tried to instill a lot of that. I've taken a lot of lessons from my dad on that. I give him hell a lot, but I've taken a lot of lessons from my dad on that, on just how to be a man and how to raise men.
It's funny because some ways my dad and I are very different, but in a lot of ways we are very the same. My love of golf comes from my dad, probably my love of sports in general. Thank you for passing along your love of crummy teams, Dad. Appreciate that one. That's been awesome. My excitability, my ability to stay calm in pressure-packed situations. But maybe the thing that I would have to thank my dad for the most is my work ethic, because there's no way I would be doing what I am right now without that.
Have you ever beaten him in arm wrestling?
We probably haven't tried since I was like 11 years old, so.
Neither of us are follically challenged, so I take a great appreciation from him.
Well, they say that's from your mom,
for
Reese.
Those good genes. Well, I'm going to give him the credit here, though.
There you go.
We're also both stubborn in the way that, no, my back and knees are fine. Yeah, I'm getting older, but we can still run on it. No, it's fine. It's just pain, and it's temporary, and we'll run through it. Damn what happens after that. Sticking in the YouTube chat. Bake, do you have the button ready? Chimney Check was burner.
Chimney Chiqua
asks, hey guys, who would you guess to be this year's Arvel Reese is number 8?
That was so much fun. I'm leaning, after the first week of practice, I'm leaning Earl Little is number 1. I'm leaning that way. As it's early, so don't hold me to that, but I'm leaning that way.
That's a good one. That's one that crossed my mind. The first one that crossed my mind was Devin Sanchez is 6, but I think everybody knows that already.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking Devin McCune is number 3, but it sounds like there's a lot of people talking about him, so people will know that. I'm going to go with another one that was talked about last week that we even talked about, and Bo, you didn't even know the number at the time. And that's Jay Timmons. I think people are going to know Jay Timmons is 25 pretty quick.
Yeah. No, that was one. Yeah, because I was like, why is Bo Jackson on defense? Yeah.
I'm going to go with James Smith is number 3. He's going to be everywhere on the field, I think, and they're going to love hearing from him. Buckeye fans will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Staying in the YouTube chat, Connor asks, hey guys, it's Hail Mary time. You got JJ out left with triple coverage versus Chris Henry Jr. outright with double. Who's the ball going to?
The answer with this Ohio State offense is always the ball goes to number 4. I don't care if he has an entire pack of Wolverines trying to cover him. The ball goes to number 4. I haven't seen Chris Henry do anything in college yet. The expectations are through the roof. He looks impressive as heck. Big physical frame, all of those things. You guys heard what Chris Carter said about Jeremiah, right? Like, he's going to the Hall of Fame. He was on Eisen's show. He's like, he's going to the Hall of Fame. That's so much. So much. He said he's a combination of Calvin Johnson and Julio Jones.
Who gets there first, Jeremiah or AB?
Hopefully Jeremiah is not eligible here for about 20 years. So
yeah,
I think the correct answer is always Jeremiah. I don't think you can go wrong in either of that. But when I hear that question, you know, the first thing I thought was Devin McCune's wide open down the middle.
Someone's open.
Someone's not being covered.
Yeah. Three's wide open in the middle there. Hit him. Or maybe one. Maybe it's Brandon Ennis.
Ace asks in the YouTube chat, hey guys, I'm having KFC popcorn chicken for lunch today. It went away years ago, and I'm very glad it's back. What's a long-lost fast food item you would like to see make a comeback?
Oh, okay, I got one. Apparently, it's not on their menu anymore, and I haven't eaten at this establishment in a very, very long time, but I was trying to... So, for whatever reason, and it, my boys just... The idea of Arby's, they just think it's gross. And I'm like, actually, Arby's is pretty great. As I remembered, it was pretty great. Now, the last time I had it, I had heartburn so bad that I went to the ER thinking I was having an appendectomy. So I haven't had it since then, and that was about 10 years ago. Truly, that happened. Middle of the night, I just got up. I'm like, I got to go to the ER. I think I'm going to have an appendectomy. I'm going to die. My wife and kids are at the condo. I had to drive myself. It was nuts. She's like, what'd you have for dinner? And I said, well, this. And she's like, well, I think you're having indigestion. And sure enough, I did. Long story short, I used to eat Arby's once a week in college. It was on Saturday mornings before college football, and we would get the Arby's melt. I'd always get two Arby melts, and I don't think they make those anymore. I was looking at their menu because I was trying to, this is something we've talked about all summer with the boys. I'm like, I'm going to get you some Arby's. I think you're going to like it. I think you're going to, it's going to be better than you think. They just see like the cheese and the beef, and it just doesn't work for them. I'm like, I'm telling you, this is pretty good. But I know they're not going to like the beef and cheddar because they're not going to want the onion bun. So I was like, the Arby's melt was just, it was just a beef and cheddar with just a normal bun. But I don't think they have it on the menu anymore. So that's the first thing that came to mind. And that's something that I suppose I could reverse engineer it maybe with Arby's sauce and just a big beef. Maybe that would do it. I don't know.
So the first one that comes to my mind, just because I remember it being such a big deal, was the McDonald's pizza. Although I don't think it was very good, actually.
Boy, I have no recollection of that.
The one thing that I love, and it comes and goes, because Taco Bell does this a lot on their menu, it comes and goes. I love the stacker from Taco Bell, which is just kind of like a, I don't know, it's kind of like a folded up quesadilla almost. And they bring it back for a while, and then it goes away, and they bring it back. Just make it part of your menu all the time.
For some reason, Baker, you got me thinking about the McSalad shakers. Because when I saw the question, I like looked at like what from the past. I'm like, that's fun. That was, I don't think I ever got a McSalad shaker, but for and I'm looking for 3 years between 2000 and 2003, the Garden Chef and Grilled Chicken Caesar varieties were just in like a Slurpee cup with the lid on it.
Do you guys?
That's all you needed.
Do you guys remember, I think this was a year, maybe two ago, Taco Bell brought back the Mexican pizza for a while and people went crazy?
So I loved the I was just going to bring that up. So that was always, it was always two Doritos, whatever, the Doritos tacos and a Mexican pizza. That was always it. It was always the order. And then years ago, I took one of the boys to Taco Bell to get some and I'm like, wait, where's the, what happened to the Mexican pizza? It's gone? Is it still gone or is it back? I have no idea now. I haven't been to Taco Bell in a while.
I don't think it's there. Right? And I think they brought it back for a limited time, and that was it.
That was it, yeah. That was always the go-to. Good job out of all of you. Go ahead, real quick.
It says it's still there at Taco Bell. Yeah, it returned as a permanent item in September of 2022. Oh. But I think there have been like ingredient shortages for Taco Bell to make Mexican pizzas at most locations.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. Great job out of all of you, and good job out of Reese administering all of that. Mike Petraglia on my favorite to win the AFC, the Cincinnati Bengals, opening preseason play tomorrow. We'll get a preview with Mike coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Fan. The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Reese's mustache is so nice, it has its own area code.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, when we talk Cincinnati Bengals around here, we love to do it with our buddy Mike Petraglia at Tregs on the X platform, at Jungle Roar Pod, CLNSCincy.com. That's where you can find him. He's one of the best in the business on it. Mike, I'm looking at all these preseason polls of NFL teams and power rankings and all of this, and I look at the Bengals and I just go, gosh, I think that's the best team in the AFC. I just don't see many holes, and I know people are worried about the health, but when you're doing preseason stuff, you can't really worry about those things. What am I missing? You've seen this team every day in training camp. Do they look like a team that can go in the Super Bowl to you?
Yes, because of their defense. I am one person who is buying in to the hype over Dexter Lawrence and Boye Mafe. Those two alone, I can tell you, Bo, have transformed the defense into a below, maybe an average to below average defense, into a unit capable of disrupting on every single down or close to it. And they didn't have that last year. Plus, if Cassius Howell is the rookie I think he's going to be out of Texas A&M, the defending SEC Defensive Player of the Year, they've got depth. They've not only got the playmakers, but I think they've got the quality depth that they did not have before. And in the offseason, Al Golden, the defensive coordinator, and Duke Tobin talked about having wave after wave of defensive pressure, something that they had lacked in the last several years on defense. And I think they have it now, and I've seen it in training camp. And yes, it's only training camp, but based on what I've seen, I think the defensive unit is legit. I think their secondary has had some pieces added to it, namely Brian Cook is the safety. But DJ Turner and Dax Hill are coming into their own. And I do think that they have some depth back there as well. So I think they're in terrific shape defensively. And if they can only give their offense the ball maybe once a game, or if they can generate a couple of turnovers here and there, that will take some of the pressure off of the off of the offense.
Mike, you nailed it. Like, all you got to, you don't have to be the number one defense in the NFL. You just got to get a couple of stops here and there and let Joe and the boys cook, and then away you go. You know, a lot of teams in the NFL will say, look, it's iron sharpens iron, our ones against our ones, and this is when best v best. But down there, for really since Burrow's been there, it's been a one-sided show. You talk about that defense. Are there some examples in camp that you've seen of that defense frustrating an offense that I think has as many weapons as anybody in the league?
Dexter Lawrence. I mean, he is like beating up Ted Karras. And I think Ted Karras has held his own really at times, done the best he possibly can. But he's pushed Ted back into Joe Burrow several times in training camp. And then I'd say Jonathan Allen has fed off of Dexter Lawrence. He is free agent, obviously, from Washington and Minnesota. And he's come in, and he looks like a re-energized defensive lineman. And he is a classic three-technique, get-after-the-passer type of defensive tackle. And he can really help. B.J. Hill has been out. He's been on the PUP list. After dealing with an ankle injury and surgery in the offseason, he's close to returning. And then you have T.J. Slayton, who has looked much better, much more athletic this camp than he did. Last year he looked a little bit slow, and it seemed like to me with T.J. Slayton, the free agent out of Green Bay, they were leaning on him too much, and I think he wore down pretty early in the season. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I don't think they're going to have to lean on him as much. And early on in camp, he looks great. But again, Boye Mafe off the edge, he's been getting to the quarterback. Love what I see from him. Miles Murphy did not get the 50-year contract extension as a first rounder in 2023. So he's got a point to prove, and he's playing with a chip on his shoulder. So those are the things that I've noticed so far in camp.
And on the other side of it, and you're following this on a daily basis, so maybe there's somebody that I'm missing. I acknowledge that it's entirely possible. Did they have everybody back offensively?
They pretty much, yes, they do. For the first time in Joe Burrow's time in Cincinnati, he knows who all five offensive linemen are going into training camp. And so far, so good. Knock wood. Nobody's been hurt, so it's Ted Karras at center. You have Dylan Fairchild and Dalton Reisner as the guards. You have Orlando Brown Jr. and Amarius Mims as the tackles. When you can slot those guys in and feel confident about those five guys, which they do, that's a great position for Joe Burrow to be in. Mike Gesicki's the tight end with Drew Sample as the blocking tight end. Eric Gall is coming back from a knee injury, but he looks really good. They're going to rely on him quite a bit at the tight end position. Then you have Jamar T. Andre Yosavash, and the rookie Colby Young out of Georgia has looked really good in training camp so far. They are very deep. And Chase Brown. I haven't even mentioned Chase Brown, who, by the way, Bo, has been the best offensive player in training camp. He really has been. He has looked like he is the most ready to start the season. He looks most improved from last year to this year. Explosive out of the backfield. It looks like he's ready to be add that new dimension to the Bengals offense that they've really been waiting for the last couple of seasons.
Buddy, this is why, I don't see any holes. I just don't. To me, they look like the best team in the AFC, and I think that they should be the favorite in the North. And I work with the Browns, obviously, in the NFL, so I can't bet on things. But if I could, I would put some soft earned on this team to win it because I just don't see anything. And then you've got Burrow. It feels like, and again, 30,000 feet, your boots on the ground. It feels like Joe, when I hear him talk publicly, Mike, it feels like he knows he's got everything he needs now.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a great point. That's what he asked for at the end of last season when they were just going through a disastrous year. And the front office went out and did what it needed to do. You can say what you want about the Brown family, about Duke Tobin, all of that. They made the moves this offseason to give Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow everything they need to succeed. And, you know, Joe Burrow has been asked, does this season feel like the 2019 LSU Tigers? And he's like, yeah, in a lot of ways it does, but we have to go out there and prove it. We have to go out there against other NFL caliber teams. You know, college is one thing, but the NFL is another. And he knows it's going to be a test every single week. But I think this team has been through the wars, been through the losing, been through not making the playoffs the last 3 years. I think they are of the right mindset if they are healthy and if Joe Burrow can make that transition to more under center. There's been a lot of talk about that in training camp, that the Bengals look like they've struggled at times under center. If he can iron that little wrinkle out about the offense, I don't see anything really stopping this team this year.
Mike, so then the question comes back to Zach, right?
Yeah.
Would this be the first time that he is going to start to, and the Brown family, incredibly patient with coaches. We know that, you know, Joe has a good relationship with Zach, but is now the pressure flipped to him? Like here's all the toys. It's time to go play in the sandbox.
I don't think there's any doubt about that, Bo. I mean, Zach needs to go out and demonstrate that this is not a 1-3 team coming out of the gate. And you've got games against Tampa Bay, at Houston, at Pittsburgh, home to Jacksonville. That's not easy. And, you know, Tampa Bay is going through a little bit of a transition, but they still have Baker at quarterback. I still like the way they are constructed as an organization. Houston's defense is Houston's defense. Is C.J. Stroud ready to start this season? They get off the slow starts, so they certainly, with DeMeco Ryans as the head coach, they have something to prove in September. I think that is their home opener. Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I think Pittsburgh is going to take a step back with Mike McCarthy as the head coach this year. We'll see, though. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers. We'll see if they get their stuff together in preseason and are ready to go. And then Jacksonville showed last year that they are again a team on the rise. This is Trevor Lawrence 2.0, and I think they are going to be a formidable opponent. So those first four games, we're going to find out from Zach Taylor if this year is indeed different. No more slow starts. That cannot happen this year, and there's no excuse for it to happen.
Our guest is Mike Petraglia. He joins us on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Mike, a ton of Bengal fans here in Central Ohio out there listening. Folks, those of you are listening, you can tell Mike knows what he's talking about. Mike, where can folks get your content?
All right, I have a preview of what to look for the Bengals-Lions preseason opener tomorrow night. That's up on clnscincy with a Y.com, clnscincy with a Y.com. You can go to my Jungle Roar podcast YouTube page for my podcast as well as locker room clips. That's up on youtube.com/@JungleRoarPod and on the X at Trags, TRAGS.
You're the best, buddy. Incredible stuff. Thank you so much for your time.
Anytime, Bo. Take care.
All right, you too. That's Mike Petraglia. I'm telling you, I don't understand it. Like, people have them fifth, sixth in the AFC. Go look at the roster. I guess, to me, like, if you're doing a preseason power ranking or whatever, you're having dialogue around a team, you can't forecast injury before it happens. They're returning everybody on offense. Their defensive line is now one of the better ones in the league. Like, pull up the R-Lads and just look at who's playing there. That Cincinnati team, if they can stay healthy, it's a big if, but if they can, look out. You're officially endorsing three things coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on the
Steve Football.
Training Camp Report.
This report is brought to you statewide by Safe Light Auto Glass and Bob's Discount Furniture. This fall camp, running back is a position head coach Ryan Day will be keeping an eye on.
I know we have Isaiah coming back. We have Bo coming back. We've added Jacoby. We have Legend. We have Turbo. Okay, we got these pieces. But, like, if we're going to get to where we need to go, we need a high level of play at that running back position. So this is critical. And both of those guys didn't practice in the spring. The good news is they both had very good freshman campaigns. But, like, here's where you got to take the next step. You know, I think about J.K. Dobbins in year two. Unbelievable freshman year. Solid second year. Ridiculous junior year, right? And so we've had guys in a program, very good freshman year. And I'm not going to say sophomore slump, but that second year was okay. And then the third year, they turned it on. Well, we can't afford to do that in that room this year. This has got to be a huge year for those guys. That's certainly an area that, you know, we got to get great production from this season.
We'll have more after this.
Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, five-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low as $2.99, and of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com. Come to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my Bob.
Bob's Discount Furniture, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safe Light Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at SafeLight.com. Safe Light Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Safe Light Repair, Safe Light Replace.
You previously heard Ryan Day speak on the importance of the running backs this season. Bo Jackson's back after becoming Ohio State's fifth true freshman to run for 1,000 yards, and his classmate Isaiah West has impressed early in fall camp.
Well, first off, you can see his body. You can see the work he's put in. Had a tremendous offseason. You know, one of the best in the whole building. Consistency. And when he was in there last year, he showed some real good things. So we want him to take the next step.
West has wowed those who go against him every day, including linebacker Peyton Pierce.
He's very explosive. He'll be in the gap, then he'll pop out, and it's like he's there, and then he's gone. And so he's super twitchy, and he had a heck of an offseason. He's super strong and fast. Like, it's just hard because he's an explosive back, and so as long as he gets to that second level and starts breaking those tackles, like, he'll have a heck of a season and have some crazy plays.
The season opener for the Buckeyes is September 5th versus Ball State. We'll have another report tomorrow. This is Tyler Danberg on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
Sponsored by To Sale Buckeye Nation. Join us February 19th to February 26th, 2027, as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer out of Barbados on the Silver Sea, Silver Ray. Meet more than 35 Buckeye greats plus some of your favorite current Buckeyes, all while making memories and helping beat cancer. You don't want to miss this ultimate Buckeye fan experience. We can't wait to see you on board. Let's celebrate 20 years of making a difference. difference. Visit BuckeyeCruise.com for more information.
Paul Keels here, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You have to check out the brand new AAA Buckeyes MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, such as 24/7 roadside assistance, plus chances to win tickets to Buckeye sporting events, access to exclusive MVP experiences, along with 10% off gear at the Ohio State Team Shop. Already a AAA member? Add the Buckeye MVP membership upgrade for free. Head to AAA.com/Buckeyes to join the squad and put your fandom in drive.
For decades,
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, Reese, what end of the poll today?
Daily Fan Poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, who will lead the Ohio State Buckeyes in carries this season? Your options are Bo Jackson, Isaiah West, Jacoby Jackson, and Legend Bay. 78% say Bo Jackson, 20% say Isaiah, and there's a smattering for Legend. But Jacoby Jackson's getting none.
It'll be Bo. It'll be Bo. That's the way that'll go. But I do think Isaiah West is going to get a lot of carries.
I thought it was interesting just hearing that training camp report there in the break and the clip from Ryan that Tyler Danberg played about, well, we've had some guys come in, J.K. Dobbins, trivia. You know, we've had some guys come in. They had great first years. And then they had a little bit of a sophomore slump. It didn't go unnoticed by me with everything that happened at the beginning of training camp.
All the pieces matter, Bake. You know that. Pay attention to all of it. It is a First Friday. Let's get you officially endorsed.
Bishop and Friends present First Friday. Officially endorsed. Because everyone deserves two Fridays.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Locally inspired dishes and award-winning cocktails. Visit highbankco.com today. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
Drink for the wrong reasons. My generation, we drink because it's good. Because it feels better than unbuttoning your collar. Because we deserve it. We drink because it's what men do.
I suppose you could use this, for lack of a better term, mixer for if you wanted it with either vodka, and the High Bank vodka would be perfect. It's the best vodka in the planet. You could also use it, the way I did it was with bourbon. But here's what it is. Bootsy actually turned me onto this. So my niece works for a company, and I'm sure you've seen it, Liquid Death. You've seen it out and about. They have a Pop-Tarts flavored tea that has very minimal sugar in it. I want to say it's like 2 grams, maybe less, of sugar in it. But a Pop-Tarts flavored iced tea. So you take that in a, like a 16 ounce, like Yeti or whatever those are, like 16 ounces of that, load it with ice, pour that in, and then 2 ounces of, I went bourbon. The time I did it, I used Woodford. But whatever your bourbon of choice, I had some Woodford around, so I used that. Use that with the Pop-Tarts flavored Liquid Death, and that is dessert in a tumbler. I had it on the golf course last week and was a real treat. So it works as you're officially endorsed if you need a little dessert in a large tumbler as you're navigating the hot weather here in Central Ohio that we've had, and certainly to recover from what happened around here yesterday. Time for three things on a First Friday. Hit it, guys.
One, two. Three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, number one for me. So I fired up this year's version of the NCAA college football. I had a little bit of time last night. The boys were at various practices, and we had finished dinner, so I had a little bit of time. I'm like, I'm going to play. So I played Ohio State, Ball State to open the season, went swimmingly, crushed them as would be expected. I get to the second game, and I'm getting back into it, and I'm an old guy, so I'm only on varsity. Like, I'm not even on All-American or Heisman or any of these levels. I'm just on varsity. Like, this shouldn't be that hard. Guys, I couldn't even play the Texas game. I couldn't even play it. I could not move the ball. Arch Manning was like Michael Vick. Anywhere I got near him, guys just bounced off him. He was completing passes anytime he wanted. Every third and nine was a gain of 15. I threw 16 picks. I'm like, I can't. What has happened? Either that game got really hard, or I just got old and suck. I don't know what happened, but I tried for 45 minutes last night to play the game against Texas, and I kept turning it off because I'm down 21-0 at half. I've thrown 3 picks with Julian. I don't know what the hell's going on. So either I suck or the game got hard. I don't know.
So they're this year's version of NC State.
Maybe. I haven't played a season yet to see like who's that team yet. I've just played one game, but I'll be damned if I'm going to lose to Texas like 35-7.
Yeah, it can't happen. No, rage quit before it gets too bad. First thing out of me, if you hear tornado sirens today, seek shelter immediately. The Franklin County Emergency Management Service says that they are going to suspend today, August 12th, the statewide test. So if you hear it, it's real. It's a it's a warning. It's an alert. It's an emergency that you should take seriously. No Wednesday noon woos for us because there is inclement weather in the forecast. So everybody be safe out there.
Yeah, we talked about the weather yesterday at the top of the show, and it's just crazy seeing more of the pictures coming in. Tody Gurneman posting pictures from over near the Woody Hayes Athletic. Snagglepuss sent us some pictures from down at Berliner, and we already talked about the damage down there. So a lot of people going to be without power. It sounds like some of them maybe till the weekend. So of all times, make sure you're a good neighbor this week and help people out. And as Reese said, some more weather supposedly coming in later today.
Jeez. Number two for me, we're going to have this in Thing or Not a Thing, but it was LeBron James returning to Los Angeles. That will be on Christmas Day. The NBA asked him what he wanted, and he said that. And by the way, I'm totally cool with that. He's played on Christmas Day probably for 20 years. I'm totally fine with it. But if you're curious when he'll be returning to Cleveland as a member of the Sixers, that'll be November 6th. It is a Friday. I predict that that will be the first time that he will be booed in Cleveland unanimously since that first season and second season in Miami.
Yeah, LeBron at this point gets what he wants. If he asks for it, you give it to him. And for the NBA, like that's a great piece to try to combat the NFL, right? Sixers, Lakers, try. We also had this, but didn't manage to get to it, with Pete Thamel in an NCAA statement saying they're not going to give a blanket waiver to the class of 2022, despite 2 weeks ago a judge ruled that if you were part of the class of 2022 as part of the five to play five, you get a fifth year. NCAA says no, but this morning a guard from UNC, Seth Trimble, committed to Louisville.
So he's a four-year player at North Carolina.
Yeah.
Like pretty iconic North Carolina player.
Yeah, he was former Mr. Basketball in Wisconsin. Like, a big deal that he's going to Louisville in the ACC, despite the NCAA saying, whoa, we're not going to do that. Good luck.
Funny how they were all unified against Sorsby, but now, this could help our team. Let's do it. second thing for me, we're going to talk some Ohio State defense tomorrow and replacing some of the guys we talked about today that are doing great things in their NFL training camp. Our interviews from last week at training camp were awesome with James and then James Smith and Matt Patricia and Arthur Smith. So we don't do this very often, but go find them. I know we already talked about it once. Go find them, whether it be our social media or wherever you get your podcasts. There's some great interviews. You are going to enjoy them.
And we're past time. We got to get to a meeting with Fish. So we're out of here, kids. Enjoy your first Friday. Act accordingly. Rothman and Ice coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.